I mean, the dad in me wants to make a bad joke about how with all this gold they're accumulating, they need to make sure a dragon doesn't show up. But, you know, because dragons like to hoard gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's bad. Let's move on. Okay.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Storage Room Movie Boom. I'm Eden.
I'm Sam.
And this is the podcast where two adult siblings talk about movies in their parents' basement.
Show is.
So this is week number three, the final week of our very first spinoff series. If you haven't been following along, that's fine. We'll hold it against you forever, but it's fine. We had decided that during the pitch segment of the show, should one of us select a movie that is the first of a series, we have to spin off and watch that entire series of movies.
Yep.
So this started with the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, obviously, and we decided to watch the first three of five, and I'm glad that we are ending after this one.
Yeah, watching four and five wouldn't have made no sense here.
Tell you what, watching this one sometimes didn't make some fucking sense. I didn't hate it, but we'll get into it. It was not my favorite of the three, for sure. Also, during a spinoff series, we decided, since we're obviously not pitching what we're going to watch next because we know what we'll watch next because we're watching a series of movies, we decided we would pitch to each other three episodes of TV, something that has a theme that connects to whatever we watched previously, right?
Yep.
So after the first one, because there was a gold coin on a locket or on a gold chain, I pitched three episodes of TV that had to do with a piece of jewelry like that, something gold on a chain. And then last week, Sam pitched three episodes of TV that had to do with piracy.
Yeah, mine was much more on the nose than yours, but it works.
It was. But what were those episodes? What did you pitch?
I pitched the episode of The Muppet Show that was hosted by Linda Ronstadt, due to her being in the Pirates of Penzance in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I pitched an episode of Johnny Quest, the original Johnny Quest, mind you.
OG Johnny Quest.
That was about pirates. And then I picked this episode of X-Men, the animated series that we're looking at today, Orphan's End, because the Starjammers, a group in it, are space pirates.
Starjammers. I got a lot to say. I wish we had more than 5 minutes, but what we're going
to
do...
you're going to have to really hold me to 5 minutes. I could talk about this show for 6 hours.
So the premise of this, having these little amuse-bouche, these little appetizers to the movie, is just to like kick us off with something different so that way we can still maintain the pitch portion of the show. So this week, I ended up selecting the episode, which was for the animated series of X-Men, Orphan's End. So, Sam, would you like to start the timer? 5 minutes.
All right. And we are go.
All right. Wow. This episode just made me feel really old. I was like, how? And this was from 1995.
Yes.
It looks like it's from 1983.
It's not that...
It's pretty
bad. Well, okay, how did you watch it? You watched it on Disney Plus, I presume, right?
I did watch it on Disney Plus, which I was pleased to see it was on there.
Oh, yeah,
but, like, one of my very first notes is, perspective means nothing in this animation, because, like...
Oh, no, it didn't have, like, the best quality of animation,
no.
But I like the look of the world, like, in terms of their backdrops and so on. It feels more lived in. When you watch a lot of animation now, it just feels too clean, too sanitized.
Well, it's definitely not clean and sanitized, so I'll give you that.
Yeah.
It definitely felt like old school cell animation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is. And,
right, exactly.
You know.
Which is cool. It just felt very of the time, or even a little bit older, I thought. I also noticed one of the first things on my list was that all of the voice actors' voices, I forgot what Rogue sounded like. I forgot what Storm sounded like. And they all sound like women that are 65 years old. Like,
nowadays, I think they're 65 years old. I actually, the actor of Cyclops, Norm Spencer, he actually passed away last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty young, I think. But I watched kind of a get together with the rest of the cast that wanted to, and they kind of were commemorating him and talking about their experiences on
that's
the show.
Cool. Sorry, I didn't mean to be a dick about it, but
no, it's fine.
Just these women's voices. I mean, you're so used to, like, watching, like, when your kids watch cartoons and I, like, follow along with them. I know that they're not old enough for something like this, like an X-Men style of show, but the voices just sound like kids, like young, youthful.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
This is definitely, it sounds like a woman who's like, I don't know, just in charge of things.
I think Storm, now she's from Barbados, and I think she lives in Barbados and just like works for the government.
Wow.
And I think the voice actress? Yeah. And the voice actress for Rogue, I think, was at one point an elected official in Canada. And I think a couple others just do regular voice work.
Patreon series on voice actors going into politics. I actually really like this. I like this move.
So, you know, they are very interesting stories. I could go on forever about that. and about the people behind the show, because this is one of my favorite shows.
Maybe
of
we
all
can
time.
Do some minis on that, because I know nothing about that. I'd be interested in hearing about it.
Yeah, there's plenty of books that I don't own that a lot of the creators of the show have written about the show, just talking about all kinds of various aspects. But anyway, we're like a minute and no, we're halfway through and we haven't even talked about the episode.
Fuck, let's talk about how amazing the theme song is.
Yes, one it's of one my of the favorites. Best ever.
What do you want to talk about with this episode? Cyclops meets his dad again.
Yeah, basically Cyclops, who was kind of raised an orphan, him and his brother, he meets his dad finally. There's a lot of backstory here. This is a very plot heavy episode.
There was a previously on. I did see
There was that was on most of the episodes of this series.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, basically his space pirate dad comes down to Earth. He's being chased by the cops and you know, he meets up with Cyclops, Scott Summers. Yeah. Jeez, I'm like flying through this now because I'm looking at the clock. We have 2 minutes.
How fast can you do it? How fast can you do it?
Oh my gosh. So
they have a monorail in this.
They do. They have a monorail. Basically, his dad is trying to protect this witness who knows where this big fortune is. The cops are in cahoots with the owner of the fortune trying to shut this girl up. There's a lot of backstabbing, a lot of revelations that, Corsair is actually Cyclops' father, mm-hmm. who they didn't know until now. And, you know, kind of reconciliation. There's a lot of actions, you know.
Scott's trusting him, not trusting him.
Exactly.
There's a lot of not
unsure.
Constant
betrayals. And there's a lot going on in a 22-minute episode here. But yeah, it's very good. It's
very plot
good.
Heavy. I, like you said, because it is plot heavy, there's a lot of previously ons. It's a serial show, right? Weeks yep. a week or whatever. A couple of my very quick revelations. The song is great. We're at 4 minutes.
Yes, we're at four minutes. That's why I flashed four.
The song is great. I like that Storm has lightning bolt earrings, a little on the nose, but whatever.
Yep. And this is the only episode where she does her hair like that. In that one big like ponytail. Yeah. The rest of them, she just kind of has it going.
Yeah, that's what I always thought. Yeah. That's interesting.
It's just one of the quirks about
it. Also, why do I remember Rogue having more of like a southern drawl?
Rogue was not in this episode.
No, I know, but in the previously on, they showed her.
Oh, but yeah, she definitely has that Mississippi drawl.
But, well, whatever they showed, I didn't hear it. But, and then they ended up in some Mayan temple or some ruins.
Yeah, they don't say where they are, but yeah. I guess they were just like, this looks cool. Let's just have a
apparently, because I was like, I'm very confused as to
yeah,
how
that
they
wasn't
were here.
Any sort of specific
the monorail
location.
Was definitely the tops for me. I fucking yeah. loved it. I was excited when she said, I'll meet you at the monorail.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a very elaborate reading of a very simple line.
Mm-hmm, absolutely was. So what were your favorite things about this really quickly?
Oh, my gosh. Norm Spencer, the actress for Cyclops, killed it in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at 5 minutes, but who cares?
All right. We did it, guys.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
Rest in peace, Norm Spencer. That's the best. That's what I want to say here.
R.I.P. Norm Spencer.
Episode.
That was fun.
That's going to sound like incoherent gibberish to anybody who doesn't know exactly what we're talking about.
We can just
okay.
tell them, hey, there's going to be a couple of minutes. Not that we have anybody that fucking listens to this, but the people that do listen to it, I'm willing to bet in the Venn diagram of people that like X-Men, the animated series, and people that like hearing us talk about nonsense, there's probably a bit of a crossover.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's a little bit of a crossover.
There's like three people.
But basically, if you haven't seen X-Men, the animated series, do it. And then when you get to this episode, Orphan's End in season three
episode
it's
16.
A good one. It is. It's a good one. It's very focused. Well, we made it seem like incoherent nonsense, but it's very focused, very small scale, but it's good. It's like a palate cleanser after all the big world ending stuff that they do all the time.
Well, it was also a nice palate cleanser considering we've had a lot of pirates. There have been a lot of fucking pirates in this last few episodes. So today we'll be wrapping up this series,
yep.
the spinoff series with Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Yep. As we get into Pirates of the Caribbean talk, it's very funny. This whole series is rather fortuitous in its timing. They recently, this week, actually, at least at the time of this recording, mm-hmm. they had the Electronic Entertainment Expo, E3. It's yeah. basically video game Comic-Con.
Right.
It's
right.
where all the big publishers get together and they, you know, show
is
new
that
trailers.
Not already kind of at Comic-Con as well?
Somewhat. But this is like video game specific.
Okay, got it.
It happens every time around this year. And, you know, they get together and they show trailers and trying to get everybody excited. Of course, sure. it was all digital this year.
Yeah.
Last year, they didn't have anything
Did you watch
at all.
It?
Bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, they had certain publishers have conferences at this time or other, and I just kind of jumped around. But the pertinent bit of information regarding this is there's a game that's on Xbox. It's called Sea of Thieves.
Okay.
I hear it's a good game. I don't have an Xbox, so I can't play it, but it's a pirate themed game. It's been going. The company that developed it is Rare. They did like Donkey Kong Country. They did a bunch of other stuff. They've been owned by Microsoft for 20 years now. But at any rate, they've had this pirate game going for the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
This year, they revealed a crossover with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Shut up. There you go.
With, I think they brought a few of the cast members back. I think Johnny Depp actually came back and like Mr.
Gibbs.
Yeah,
what else is he doing?
Yeah, exactly. You know, paying lawsuits. Yeah, and so they're doing a big crossover with them with different quest lines and stories and one thing or another. So it was just a very interesting bit. So if you haven't seen it by the time this comes out, you play Sea of Thieves, then you probably already know about it. But there you go.
Well, that's very exciting. How interesting. Very timely and pertinent.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. This was released May 25th, 2007. It is 2 hours and 49 fucking minutes.
Yeah,
wowzers.
This one's long, but unlike the previous two movies, there was a bit that I thought, you can cut this, but
we'll get to it. There's a whole section that I'm like, we could lose it.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about, but we'll get there.
Okay, got it. Once again, directed by Gore Verbinski, written by Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, who... So my critique of the last one, even though I really enjoyed the second movie, which was Dead Man's Chest.
Yep.
Even though I really, really liked it because we love Bill Nye.
Yep.
I would say that I felt like some of the jokes that were given to Johnny Depp and everybody else were pretty hack.
They were worse in this.
And I also felt like they didn't really give them a lot of jokes. It wasn't.
Oh, see, I thought that they ground the movie to a halt sometimes in the effort of giving them a joke.
See, maybe I just breezed over it because I just thought it was so unfunny. And it didn't mean it wasn't entertaining. There was so much fucking plot in this. And we are going to really do our best to like plow through this shit because there's a lot going on.
Yes, there is.
But very quickly. So get to the rest of the fact sheet, Eden. Here we go. So on IMDb, the IMDb synopsis is
IMDb.
Captain Barbossa, Will Turner, and Elizabeth Swann must sail off the edge of the map, navigate treachery and betrayal, and find Jack Sparrow to make their final alliances for one last divisive battle.
That's a pretty accurate description. I think that's good.
Pretty good.
I like it. I don't see why the battle is divisive, but let's go.
Actually says decisive. I didn't read it correctly.
Dyslexia awareness, folks. It's real.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, our favorite website, the film has an approval rating of 44% based on 228 reviews. Wowzers. But an audience score of 72.
See, now I don't remember when Rotten Tomatoes came to prominence. I think it was back.
It's been around for a long time.
But it just wasn't as omnipresent. So I didn't hear about all of this, like in terms of these scores. Hearing these numbers, I'm like, holy crap, I don't remember that at all. Like, I remember tons of people being really loving this movie, which... 72% audience is probably more indicative of the feedback I received just as a regular Joe Blow viewer.
Correct. I also think that like this is 2007, which wasn't ages ago, but that was many years ago. I think if you were of a certain person, if you're just into film, you maybe are reading more into film criticism and you're actually reading more reviews and getting into that sort of thing and relying on that versus if you're just like a person that's like, oh, hey, that looks cool. And you get your reviews from the people that you talk to and people are like, that looks rad. Then that 72% probably does reflect that. But yeah, so like Metacritic, who is as we have said, has been judged rather harshly, I think, give it 50 out of 100, which I'm not surprised based on the 44% that Rotten Tomatoes gave it. You're right. Maybe next time we look into like really the rise of Rotten Tomatoes and see when that is, because it's been around since like,
yeah, it's definitely
forever.
Been around. I just don't remember when the turning point was, if there was one or if it just kind of happened in terms of everyone using it as the quote unquote, the metric for a movie's quality. Nowadays they use it for freaking advertising. You'll go like see a DVD and it's like certified fresh, slap there on the DVD case.
I feel like the MCU has definitely pushed it into prominence because there was some movie from the MCU that made it to 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And for some reason that was significant. I don't know if it was the first to 100%.
I think it was Black Panther.
Maybe it was Black Panther. So like there was I remember that being significant and I was like, Rotten Tomatoes has been around forever, but now all of a sudden everybody's talking about it. Yeah. Like it's a true metric. Not saying it's not a true metric. It's a metric for sure. But it's certainly been given a lot of credence in recent years.
Yeah. And it's certainly got its uses. If you want a general idea as to what kind of audience thinks about this. Okay. But
yeah.
When you're sitting there going, oh, well, that movie's trash. It's only, you know, 45 or 55 or 72% on Rotten Tomatoes. Well, let's screw you. Like, that's stupid. Watch the movie. If you like it, you like it.
And I think that's why we use this metric on this podcast, is because it's widely accepted socially as being a metric that people refer to, but also it's kind of nice to see the difference between the critic ratings and the audience ratings, you know? All right, really quickly, the cast is about the same. I'm going to breeze through these super fast. Micro Machines guy, super fast. Are you ready?
Do it.
Here we go. Johnny Depp is... already messed it up.
Already screwed up. You would be a terrible auctioneer.
Johnny Depp is Jack Sparrow. Jeffrey Rush is Barbossa. Orlando Bloom is Will Turner. Keira Knightley is Elizabeth Swan. Chow Yun-Fat is Sao Fang. Bill Nye is Davy Jones. Jack Davenport is Norrington. Tom Hollander is Lord Cutler Beckett. Fucking little man. Stellar Skateboard is Bootstrap Bill Turner. Naomi Harris is Tia Dama, also Calypso. Kevin R. McNally is Gibbs. Jonathan Price is Governor Weatherby Swan. Mackenzie Crook is Raggedy. And Lee Ehrenberg is Pintle or Pintel. We still don't know.
He was in this one?
No, those are the two, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, the two...
Oh, crap. I was not thinking of somebody
else. We do this
else.
Every episode. You're like, who is that? I only threw them in there because they're in every one.
Yeah. There was a guy I wanted to look up his name, and I didn't, but I feel
so
bad.
So I will say, I mean, we'll although him, they sure. are introduced, there are a lot of new characters. Significantly, Chow Yun-Fat is the most important one that is introduced in this.
Yes.
And we'll get to the brethren of... pirates or
the Brethren Court.
The Brethren Court. All right. Actually, so, speaking of that, so did you read the trivia or did I forget to
you
fucking
did not send
here?
Me the fact sheet.
You know
so
what?
I just made up my own.
All right. Well,
my
then
head.
Enjoy this. I will just break your brain with this.
Do
a real life council of pirates existed at one time. The Brethren of the Coast was a loose coalition of pirates and buccaneers active in the 17th and 18th centuries in the Atlantic Ocean, Caribbean Sea, and Gulf of Mexico. They had a base on the island of Tortuga off the coast of Haiti and in Port Royal, Jamaica. The Brethren were originally French Huguenots and British Protestants, but their ranks were joined by other adventurers of various nationalities, including Spaniards and Africans.
Oh, well, you know what? That's very well represented in this movie. So good job, writers.
I know. Well, assuming this is correct, so I'll have to look back at the source for where that trivia came from. But if that is correct, I mean, that's pretty rad. And actually, because I made the fact sheet, I'm sorry, I didn't send it to you.
It's fine.
That actually made me enjoy that part of the movie more. I still think it's a cool concept.
Yeah.
Unnecessary in that, like, we didn't need to introduce all of those new people, but we also didn't spend a lot of time trying to get to know them.
There's a lot about the finale that's unnecessary, but we'll get to it.
There's a lot about the finale. So actually, speaking of that, so the character of Pirate Lord Mistress Ching is likely inspired by the real life Chinese pirate Chang Yi Sao, who ruled the South China Sea with her large pirate fleet in the early 1800s.
All right.
Based off
Love
a real
it.
Woman. Fucking badass. This movie at 2 hours and 49 minutes, it was the longest running Disney film until it was replaced by Endgame at 3 hours and 1 minute.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't have been. Endgame was half an hour too long.
I haven't seen any of those.
It's not.
You know. Well, yeah,
don't worry about Endgame. It's not good. I know. I'm dropping some hot takes.
That's a hot fucking take, because literally you might be the only person that doesn't like it.
And I'm okay with that.
Man on an island. Not unlike Jack Sparrow.
A lone wolf.
A solitary eagle
or a cuddly baby taper.
So this is the fourth pirate movie that Hans Zimmer has scored, although Klaus Badelt is credited for scoring the Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. Zimmer personally composed several themes for the movie while also producing the rest of the score. In addition to the three Pirates movies, he also scored Muppet Treasure Island.
Really?
So what is that?
I'd believe it, though. In the 90s, he was still doing a lot of stuff. We mentioned, I think, or I know I mentioned at one point talking about Zimmer, is that he did the score for The Critic, the theme.
I did not know that. Did you mention that before?
I did mention that before, but you probably just forgot it.
I probably forgot.
And now you know that.
So good.
So that was a Hans Zimmer.
I love it. At the time, well, I'm kind of bummed that neither of us pitched an episode of The Critic.
There were no pirates.
You're right.
I would have, but there were no pirates.
You are right.
Also, I'm not sure how you would have watched it. If you don't have it on DVD like I do, I'm not sure how you'd have seen it.
You wouldn't have let me borrow it?
Hell no. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. This movie was the most expensive film ever made at the time, not adjusted for inflation. The budget ran to $300 million. That's more than the budget of all three Lord of the Rings movies combined.
Where'd the money go? Not that the movie looks cheap. I don't see so much here that would cost all that much.
I think, because it's not CG. I mean, there is CG in this movie a lot, but it doesn't look phenomenal.
Yeah, it doesn't look like an overproduced George Lucas production.
I think it's all the giant set pieces, and that's a lot of fucking people.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of practical sets and a lot of big things going on.
I mean, by this time,
they probably did a lot of location shooting too. I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sure they did. But like, you also, I mean, not only Johnny Depp, but I feel like Jeffrey Rush, you've got a lot of big names in this. There's probably a lot of big money that's going toward those people as well.
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, filming started on this without a finished script.
You'd be surprised how often that happens.
No, well, I know that's true. Well, they also started filming this at the same time as the second one.
Yeah, that makes sense too, considering how much this one and the last one are intertwined plot-wise.
Correct. Let's see, what else do we have in here? Just a little tidbit for myself or any other huge Game of Thrones fans. This movie contains three actors from Game of Thrones. Jonathan Pryce, who plays the High Sparrow. High Sparrow! Ah, what a connection.
Sparrow, love it.
Mackenzie Crook, who is Tweedledee or Tweedledum, whichever the skinny one. He plays Oral. He's one of the wildlings that can warg.
Dude, I quit watching that show for a while.
And then Andy Beckwith is the guy that...
Because you want another hot take? I don't think it's very good.
Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Fucking, I'm going to flip this motherfucking table. Get out. Get the fuck out of here. And then Andy Beckwith, who I don't know he played in this movie, but in Game of Thrones, he was the very foolish man who gave Arya his name before she stabbed him in the heart. Anyway. Sure. So, well... You
that's
know,
whatever you're talking about for you.
You know, you fucking know. And that's you don't true. Know. So here we go.
That's inside reference and I'm on the outside. Got it.
No, you've definitely seen it. It was in an earlier season. If you watched
I just forgot because I didn't give a shit.
It was the part where she asked the guy in the road, she's with the Hound, and she goes, what is your name? And he tells her and she goes, thank you. And then takes needle and stabs him in the heart.
I think it was
the first guy that he killed or that she killed, maybe.
sure.
Whatever.
I'd probably know his face. I know the segment
podcast
of the show.
Over.
Yep, we lasted a good however many episodes this is. 75? I don't fucking know.
Anyway, that's
it was a good run.
It was a good run. So let's give general thoughts at the top and then delve right the fuck into this because there's so much plot to cover.
Yeah, we've already spent like half an hour on this bad boy without even talking about it. I remember I definitely saw this at a midnight show, which, you know, when you're drinking big movie theater drinks and popcorn and stuff, you definitely have to pee by the end of this sucker.
For sure.
I remember liking it at the time. Definitely didn't like it as much as the second one, but probably liked it more than the first at the time.
Yep.
We'll see if that's changed by the end of the episode here.
Yep.
But I don't really have much more to say about it other than that of my initial thoughts at the time. Now I just watched it on Disney Plus.
I mean, I've definitely seen it, but it's been a while. I've probably seen it once. I don't remember if I saw it in the theater or not, but the scene that stuck out to me that we'll get to is when Calliope turns into a giant woman.
Callisto.
Yep. Yep.
You're having all kinds of lists tonight.
Fuck.
Yowza.
Calliope.
Yeah, you're thinking Greeks.
I am thinking Greeks.
I don't know why you're thinking Greeks, but...
I don't know.
Anyway.
Calypso.
Calypso.
Calliope.
Calypso.
Calypso, but anyway.
See, I always get confused with, I haven't done it so far, but if I call her Callisto at some point, it's because I'm thinking of X-Men.
Well, there you go. So both of us are screwed on this.
So
we could just call her Teodama.
Okay.
There you go.
Because she's technically only Callisto. See, I already freaking did it.
You're already doing it. Calypso.
She's not formally Calypso until towards the end of the movie.
That's very true. Even though they're heavy handed with the clues on that.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we'll get there.
We'll get there. I will say that there were parts of this that I found enjoyable, but same thing. We'll get to the rankings. This is my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah, it was very long. There were parts I would have cut out. I've also seen it before, so I wasn't as intrigued, but they don't get Bill Nye enough to do in this.
That's true.
Keira Knightley fucking sucks in this.
Yeah, like, she's got a lot of parts, and we'll, of course, get to them, but they don't work for her.
They did her dirty basically the whole series. I don't think that they've done her very well the whole time. And also, like, I've seen Keira Knightley be very good and talented in other stuff. this, I didn't feel like she did it.
Yeah, she didn't really have to do it, though, for the type of movie this is.
But let's start at the very top. It's a musical, baby.
Actually, I really like this opening sequence. It's very dark.
Yeah, they killed a kid.
Yeah, they killed lots of people. Basically, all these people in Port Royal being lined up to hang. Mm-hmm. And we're talking like probably hundreds of people.
Yes.
And there's this British stooge who's saying, Lord Cutler Beckett is now in control of everything. And he's rescinding habeas corpus and right to attorney and right to trial. And basically, he's declared total rule over everything, which Beckett.
I know.
He does not work at all as a villain. What's his motivation? What does he want? What's he doing?
I'm with you. He's the worst bad guy.
If you just want money, then why are you killing all these people and being a totalitarian? They can't spend money if they're dead.
I think that's the thing that I find interesting, because he really, especially in this one, less so in the last one, Davy Jones was the big bad, right?
Yeah, and that's why it's better.
In this one, it is better. You're right. In this one, Beckett is the big bad because he's the dictator. He's ruling all of the seas because he has the heart of Davy Jones.
Right.
And now he's taken away all of these rights from the people in Port Royal.
And presumably other places, because he's like a world conquering bad guy.
Correct. Yeah. It does feel like one of those one dimensional characters is like, I just want world domination. It's like, well, fucking why? For what? Like, what is it? Because is it Napoleon complex? Like, what are we fucking working with here?
He's basically a thinly veiled analogy for capitalism. Very thinly veiled. There is the previous movies, I had said, in the third one, they briefly talk about this whole capitalism. No, it's very overt. Very watching overt. It this time, it is so explicit. Capitalism is the death of freedom.
Exactly. And that's what they were saying the whole time. And so I agree with you. He was not an intriguing bad guy.
Yeah. And they're trying to make him like he's, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like, he's intimidating, but he's really just a punk ass bitch compared to Davy Jones.
He's a punk ass bitch. Yeah. And the way, I don't like the way
he's also like 4 feet tall. I'm sorry. I'm not going to find you intimidating.
Little man
and
right hand. Those monikers still made it into my notes.
Small hands smell like cabbage.
He's not a successful bad guy, but we do get, before we get to Beckett, so we get the scene off the top. There's a musical.
Yes. And this song is, I forget the name of it. Yeah. Yo Ho Ho in a Bottle of Rum or whatever.
Correct. Blow the Man Down.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if that's the name of it, but that's how it goes, right?
Sure. We'll say that because anyway.
Insert royalty-free version of that song.
Exactly. This song is remixed and used several times throughout the movie as kind of the theme of this movie.
Right.
And it's very well done. It just did several parts.
It also ends the movie, the very last scene.
Is it?
It does, because Jack floats off in his dinghy and he starts to sing the song.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought that was a different song. See, I'm getting myself confused. But anyway, yeah, that's the musical theme of this movie. And it's very well implemented and mixed up by Zimmer throughout.
It's an interesting way to start the movie. I mean, I make fun of it because essentially everybody starts singing.
Yeah.
But they do, in the way that we felt like the last one really set the tone with how dark it was going to be at the beginning, this one I felt like it tried to set the tone for like the levity of the situation, that Beckett is here. He's the big bad. People are getting killed left and right for seemingly no reason. Mm-hmm. But again, as we just explained, I don't feel like Beckett feels that threatening, even though he supposedly is. And like, I don't know. He's also like really, really into a pirate's life. He's into that whole vibe. In a strange way, like he's so invested in it, and rather than a way of being like, I just need to quash you because you're interfering with my money. He's like,
right.
So wait, tell me about the 8 pieces of 9 or 9 pieces.
Right.
Of 8.
He just wants to eliminate the pirates,
9 pieces
but
of 8.
He doesn't exactly. They don't exactly say why he wants to do that. And they later intimate that, he's got this history with Jack, but we don't know what that history is because they never say what it is. They just, he really wants Sparrow dead. Okay, well, that's great. You told us that, but why?
Right, exactly.
What does it matter? If you're just out there to make money, pirates steal stuff and they could theoretically steal from you and cost you money.
Yeah.
But they make it seem like there's more to it than that, and we're never shown what that is.
I think
is.
They could have cut out, even though, I mean, this is an adventure movie. It's an action movie.
Yes.
Right? And that is a successful part of it. It's about action and adventure, and you were shown that. But I feel like they could have still had a lot of action and adventure, taken out some of the plot, and then in lieu of like some of these little side adventures or little you know, what do you call them? Where you like go off on a one way and it doesn't really make sense. But like, either way, some of these little tangents that they go off on.
Detours.
Then instead of taking some of those that kind of round you back to where you were fucking going in the first place,
yep.
they could have taken that out and instead developed some of these characters to make it more interesting. Like you said, what's the history behind Jack and Beckett?
Right.
You know? Ay, Dios mio. We are only on the second scene of the movie.
Yeah, I know. We've gone like 15 minutes on one scene.
Christ. So
they're anyway, in Singapore.
They're in Singapore. It is a, it feels like a theme park ride. It is yes. a like kind of like cool, but a little cheesy looking set piece. But
clearly filmed on a studio backlot, but that's okay.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine. So
they show a shot of a fishmonger cutting off a fish's head.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is basically a cliche. I swear I've seen that 100 times in different things.
Yeah.
Like they always do it to show you, oh, well, these are very salt of the earth people. Look, this fishmonger is cutting a fish's head off.
Agreed.
I don't know. It just it felt like a cliche.
I agree. So Keira Knightley comes in. She's in.
She's appropriating the mess out of this movie.
That's all over my fucking notes. I was like, cultural appropriation and Keira Knightley. They're best friends in this movie.
Oh,
best
yes.
fucking friends. So
there's all kinds of weird stuff going on with her in this movie, too. Oh,
Christ. So anyway, she's in a rice paddy hat. She's in a little fucking boat.
Let's set up two countdown or two checklists for this movie regarding her. One, how many times can she appropriate another culture?
Yes.
And two, how many guys get freaky with her at one point or another? Because it's basically half the cast.
Well, like I told you in the last movie, when she, Jack, Will, and Norrington are all on an island, I'm like, all three of those guys are trying to fuck that one girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and this one, you had a fourth guy.
Yep, exactly.
And they all do weird stuff with her in this movie.
Well, they actually, so in this first scene, she meets up with Barbossa and they get taken in to meet Chow Yun-Fat. Before they go in to meet Chow Yun-Fat, they do that stupid scene where they're like, you've got to dispose of all your weapons until you go in to see him. And then it's the whole bit about like, sister, open that jacket up. And then she's got this gun and this gun and this gun. And
that
she
doesn't
looks,
make sense for her character.
No, it doesn't. And also she looks so stupid doing it. Like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be funny and it's a hack joke and it looks dumb. But the worst part is at the end of it, when she has disposed of all of her weapons.
Yeah.
They're like, lose the fucking shirt. And then they make her put on a robe.
Why don't they make Barbossa wear no pants?
Because it's fucking disgusting, man. It is like, everybody's trying to like, do terrible things.
There's
to
There's a
Karen
lot
Atlas.
Of creepy stuff in this
so
movie.
So much creepy shit.
Here
so they go in and we're introduced to Chow Yun-Fat, who plays Cao Feng.
Yes. Pirate Lord Cao Feng.
I love Chow Yun-Fat.
He's good.
He's really good.
They did a great job with his makeup and everything.
I was just
going to
say,
too.
You know, we talked about teeth and nails in the last one and how disgusting
it
was.
Well, this is the definition of teeth and nails.
Wowzers, those nails. What a look. But I actually noticed that in another scene a little bit later. Oh, no, maybe it was a scene where Cao Feng is talking to Barbossa and just both of the makeup on their faces looks amazing.
Yeah.
They look so good. Hair, makeup, costuming in this.
Yeah.
Fucking rad.
Top notch.
Awesome. I will definitely give them that. So basically, Barbossa has to convince him and be like, hey, we've got to convene the Brethren Court.
They also want some secret special charts that Chow Yun-Fat has.
Correct.
In order to try and get Jack Sparrow back.
Right.
Which they sent Will in earlier under the cover of darkness or whatever.
He fucked it up.
And he got caught trying to steal these charts.
Of course he did. So they want the charts so they can go get Jack, because that's how we left the last movie, right? Like Calypso is like, hey, or Teodama at the time. Teodama is like, do you want to get Jack back? Do you want to go to the end of the earth and blah, 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 whatever. So they're here to get those maps to do that. But he also says they want to convene the Brethren Court. But in order to do that, the ninth pirate that has a piece of silver is Jack Sparrow. So they got to go get him.
The ninth piece of eight. There's a lot of great wordplay. First of all, I love the name Brethren Court.
Yep.
As you mentioned, it was presumably named after a real,
correct.
You know, or at least inspired by a real group. And then I know a piece of eight is just a piece of gold, what mm-hmm. have you. I don't know why, but I just think nine pieces of eight is really clever.
I love it.
I love it.
That's one of my favorite parts of this whole movie, actually. Yeah. I wrote a list of like my top five MacGuffins or, you know, like things, items in the world.
Yep.
And that concept I thought was really fucking rad.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when they go into it at the actual meeting of the Brethren, when they're all just dropping random shit in there. And then Gibbs does a little exposition on that. He's like, well, we didn't want to call it the meeting of the people with random shit in their hands.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do? We presumably get the map.
Well, we find out that, you know, Will gets caught. there, you know, the group of other folks, Mr. Gibbs and everything, sneak underneath this bathhouse just in case things go sour, which they do. And, you know, there's a big fight scene. But first, there's something I have to mention because this is a joke that my wife and I have. The every once in a while, because they're in a bathhouse and Chow Yun-Fat will grab this cloth at his side and touch to his face and he'll just be like, more steam.
Yeah.
And so they'll adjust something, you know, they'll flip a sign and make more steam in the bathhouse. So my wife and I use that joke all the time, usually like in reference to showers, if it's not hot enough or something, we're just like, more steam.
More steam.
More steam.
Yeah, he does call for more steam several times.
Yeah, it's like four times. And so it just, yeah, that's one that I use all the time.
I had to mention it though. I like that. I also like that he is fully dressed. There are lots of, they show lots of men in there in different baths.
This is the least sexiest bathhouse you'll ever see.
Ooh, it's nasty.
Yeah.
So yes, essentially it's about to come to blows where Barbossa and Keira Knightley are like on one side. And their helpers, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and Gibbs are down underneath them in the basement or whatever it is, versus Cao Fang and his crew. And all of a sudden they realize, oh shit, there's somebody else here. And then the British come in.
Yeah, right before this, because there's a great line that I love. Cao Fang looks at one of the guy's backs, just one of his guys, and he sees his tattoo is running.
Yep.
So he realizes this guy's a fake. So he pulls the knife on the guy and says, all right, you guys back off. I'm going to kill this guy. And Jeffrey Rush looks around. We'll kill him. He's not our man.
I know. I thought that was fucking hilarious. I was like, yeah, okay.
And then, yeah, as you mentioned, the British pop in and start shooting everybody.
It's fucking melee. So there's a lot of fighting. Obviously, there are like fireworks going off. There's explosions. It's as you can imagine. I wrote that little man Beckett, little man's right hand, the mean looking dude.
I call him Captain Irish.
Oh, why?
Because he's got that thick accent. I don't know why I call him Irish, but I should call him like Captain Cockney or something like that. But Captain, anyway.
Well, I call him right hand because he's little man's right hand.
Okay, we'll use right hand then. That's better than Captain
Irish.
So
right hand is in there and he kills a lady in her fucking face.
Oh, he kills two ladies in her face.
I mean, like I was actually surprised. So I was sitting
kind of shocking.
I was down here watching him because I was like, again, this is kind of a kid movie. What is this, 13?
PG-13.
Yeah, so it's
pushing it for PG-13.
It sure is. I mean, they shoot her right in the fucking forehead. He does. Because I was like, whoa, dude. Like, mom was in the other room. She's like, what is it? So they kill a couple of ladies. That sucks. I wrote, the small guy has a big gun. It was unnecessary, but I giggled.
Well, during this melee, Will, you know, manages to get loose and he, you know, gets with Cao Fang and basically makes a deal with him to screw everybody else. He wants to get his dad back off the Flying Dutchman.
Correct.
So he's like, all right, you do this for me and I'll do this for you. You know, you scratch your back and you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours type thing. Dirty dealing, because at this point, Will ain't got a whole lot going for him.
No.
I mean, aside from being a sissy bitch,
he thinks his
girlfriend's done him dirty. And the only thing he's got to grab onto is the fact that, oh, I can get my dad back if I do this.
Yes. And so he wants the Black Pearl in order to do that.
Exactly. So he makes a deal to double cross everybody once they get Sparrow back. And, you know, that's just one of the many plot details that gets revealed here.
So. Let's see, what else we got? I've got that Davy Jones is blowing shit up left and right. Why do I have that?
Because there was just a scene where Davy Jones was killing lots of people, which is awesome, of course, because it's Davy Jones.
Yeah, but they gave him so little to do in this.
It's like in the first half, he doesn't do anything. In the second half, he's got a bit more because there's a lot of story and relationship stuff with him.
A lot of the story involves him, but I still feel like they didn't give him enough to, like, he felt way more developed in the second film.
Well, yes and no. I mean, because they do give him a lot more backstory. They flesh out the backstory. But I agree, he should have been, and essentially the movie treats him as the big bad guy. Beckett's really kind of an afterthought in the final battle, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Anyway, so everyone escapes. You know, Cao Fang gives a ship and a crew to Barbossa, Will, and all them. So they've got a boat.
Yep.
They are in the glacial, you know, the North Pole, presumably, or somewhere very cold because it's just a boat going through icebergs. And there were some really pretty ship shots in this movie.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the most beautiful scenes, I thought.
Yeah, there's
like,
that one.
Especially when they're going in, like, it kind of shows them in the cave as they're heading toward, like, the blackness in front of
them.
That
one, there's a Starry Night shot later on that's just great.
That's actually very beautiful.
So anyway, these guys are in the cold. They're trying to figure out how to work these maps because they're not like modern maps. They've got these weird circles, concentric circles, and you can rotate them and it'll show you different things.
Yes, exactly.
And Will even makes a point to tell the guy that's with him, it's one of Sal Fang's men, who is an actor that I've seen a dozen different times. I should have looked up his name.
I know, agreed.
Because I wanted to give him a shout out, but I didn't, and I feel bad about it. But
keep talking. I can look it up.
Anyway, so he's like, these aren't as accurate as modern maps, but the other guy says, yeah, but they show you how to get to more places, which is one of those cool little bits of wordplay that I just love.
So that's actually, you know, like I definitely hated on the writing for this because, like I said, the jokes are not there for me, and they're definitely, when they are there, they're bad, right? But they, what are their fucking names? Oh my God, now I can't remember. Ted and Terry, the guys that wrote all three of these. TNT. TNT can turn a fucking phrase. There are a couple of lines in here where I was like, damn, all right.
Yeah, you very nailed good. It. You earned that bad joke with this good line.
There you go. So if we're going one for one, I still think they're in the red, but...
Agreed.
Yeah.
So anyway, during this portion of the movie, they find a bit, I forget exactly what it says on the map. They start talking about the Green Flash.
Correct.
And so Barbosa's like, Mr. Gibbs, have you ever seen the Green Flash? And
Gibbs is like the exposition man.
Exactly. And they freaking know it because Mr. Gibbs starts expositing and saying, oh, well, you know, a lot of guys have seen it that hadn't, and a lot of guys think they have. And, you know, he's talking about this Green Flash, and then he's interrupted by Tweedledee, who like gives the punchline. It's like, when somebody returns to this world from the dead, and Gibbs gives him the stink eye because he's like, I'm the exposition guy. Should know not to encroach on my exposition space. And I just love that the movie knows that they're using him for that purpose.
Correct.
And give you that little, like, really? Really, guy? Gibbs is the one who does this.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. So we see while they're heading out, there's a quick little scene, and I only mention it because I think part of it is funny, is that we're reminded that Beckett has Davy Jones's heart, and that's why he controls him. So now Davy Jones is Beckett's bitch, little man's bitch. I know. So this is where they decide they're going to kill Jonathan Pryce, because Jonathan Pryce has like three lines in this movie. I also like that Beckett's like, basically like, I would like to remind you who you work for. And then there's like six British officers pointing guns at a heart in a box. And it just made me laugh so hard.
Well, considering the angles that some of these guys are at, if they fired, they would hit the box and not the heart.
Well, also later on, you will see, because there are a couple of different shots where you see that same room where it's like heavily armored and all of this weaponry is pointed at the fucking box.
Yeah.
Like it's pointed at the box like it's a bomb or something like that. But all of the weapons at that point in some of these scenes, you would kill the person standing across from you.
Exactly.
It would just be a massacre.
I mean, they've got two small cannons on either side of this box.
I know. It's hilarious.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, there's a lot of cool set decoration in this. The tiny cannons, not my favorite.
No, it's ridiculous. It kind of reminds me of you'll see it on Twitter a lot, but it's just insert opinion here that will give you this reaction. And it's usually a person standing along with a ton of guns or swords or something pointed at it. They're basically trying to add, you know, goad you into giving a contrarian opinion.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it reminded me of.
Got it. Yeah. So we do hear that Little Man made Davy Jones kill the Kraken.
It was another instance of major things happening off screen between movies.
What a fucking bummer.
Thing with the Isla de Muerta in between the first two movies where, it just sank. It's not there anymore. Who cares?
It's not there anymore. Oh, the Kraken that was the big bad in the second movie?
Yeah.
Just gone.
The climatic battle in the second movie? Nope. It's dead now and you didn't get to see it. So...
really stupid. So there's a little bit of shit where you mentioned the night sky shot where we're back on the ship with our heroes.
Yep.
And it's really beautiful.
It's very
beautiful because the water is like a mirror and it's gorgeous and they're heading toward the end of the earth. And before that, I just wrote down, dude, the love triangle is the fucking worst.
Yeah, it's Will being a bitch.
Kira also sucking.
Yeah.
Not Kira. Lizzie, excuse me.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Sidebar. I did actually learn this, and I don't know if I shared this in the last episode, but the actress Naomi, who plays Calypso/Tiadama, her mother is Jamaican. That's how she learned that accent and why it's so effective.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
So I just wrote down Barbosa is great per usual.
Oh, yeah. He is like, We'll get to him, but we'll get to top five characters in the franchise, but he's up there.
Top five characters. You and I talked about possibly doing a top five captains, which would again be very difficult because there are a lot of captains in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't take down any of their names, so I may be somewhat unprepared.
Well, no. We don't have to do it because I like the top five characters of the franchise. I think that's a better top five. But I'll say this, Barbossa, my favorite fucking captain. I also think he's the most successful, aside maybe to Davy Jones.
Yeah, I can agree with that logic.
Great.
Love it.
So they get to the edge of world and they fall into nothing. Bye-bye.
Yep, they fall off. Oh, yeah, because there was a good bit of wordplay here, and I don't have it exactly one-to-one. They're like, they go up to Barbossa and they say, hey, do you know where the hell we're going? He's like, yeah, we're good and lost now. And like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah,
where are you?
That was a nice line.
You have to be lost to find a place where no one knows where it is. Otherwise, yep. Everyone could get there or something like that.
Something great.
It was just another banger line from Jeffrey Rush that, you know, you earned a bad joke for that. Good job, TNT.
There you go. Good job, TNT.
we'll get a bad joke.
Yeah, we'll trade one for one. So what joke do you want to trade in for that one?
We'll say bad, but it's good because I like the one where they're in the glacier and the Chinese guy breaks his toe off.
Okay. Well, then they get
stupid,
that one.
But you know, I'll give them that.
Okay, got it. Actually, I have another line written down here in a second. But so we cut to the most artsy fartsy part of the whole movie, which is Jack in Purgatory.
I think this is one of the most bloated parts of the whole movie.
It's too long. I do like it.
Yeah, it's very creative and very interesting, but I feel like you could have cut some of it out.
It was too long. We got the point.
Yeah.
But I thought that some of the most beautiful shots were in this.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting, really cool, like a different and unique way to show Purgatory rather than just being in a white box, right?
Right. So there is a lot of white.
Yeah, there is a lot of white. So he's like on these salt flats. The pearl is there, but then there's like these rock crabs. But primarily, we see that Jack has gone insane because he's crewing a ship full of Jack Sparrows.
Now, I'm curious, is this an aspect of his personality that just now appeared in Purgatory, or is this what he has been seeing the entire movie series and we're just now getting an insight into it?
To me, I believe that it's because he's in Purgatory.
Okay.
That's what I would be led to believe.
Also, can we put the first tick on another checkbox here for a number of weird tongue / licking shots in the movie?
There are a lot of them.
I know.
Come on, Jack.
No, it's not just him. There's several weird, just out of place, like up close tongue and licking shots.
Mm. Well, you know what? I feel like that's analogous to the very last shot of the second movie where Barbossa is reintroduced and then he bites that apple and fucking drools all over himself. Ugh, come on, guys. Disgusting.
I mean, he's a dirty pirate. I get it. But
things I have to say is, so yeah, lots of visual bits that are really beautiful. There's a really great shot where Jack has like fallen onto his back on the salt flats and you're looking at him directly downward and you see the shadow of the ship kind of like cast over him.
Yep.
It's a really beautiful shot. I do like when he's arguing with all the other Jack Sparrows that run the ship, he calls them feculent maggots.
Yeah.
And I was like, oof, that's a good one. You get a bad joke for that one.
Yeah.
Immediately it's followed up with a bad joke, which is when Jack is off the ship walking around on the salt flats, he goes, oh, look, a rope.
Yeah.
And then he pulls the rope. I'm like, don't say anything. Just see the rope, act weird, and then pull the rope.
Yeah. Or when he sees the rock behind him, he's just like, shoo.
Yeah.
And you're like, God,
I know.
Come on.
I know. Guys,
I don't know if you let him improv that part, but don't.
Anyway, so we get out of Purgatory. Then we see our crew that had fallen off the edge of the world. They wash up on a shore.
Of Purgatory.
And super goddamn quickly, Jack shows up.
Yeah, it's pretty coincidental that he managed to show up on the shores of Purgatory just when they did. But I guess you got to get this movie going, right?
Well, you know, what actually is interesting is I checked the clock because I was like, it both felt like it was a long time and not a long time to when they finally got Jack into the movie.
Yeah.
It was 45 minutes in.
Yeah, it's a pretty good amount of time.
But for a 2- and 3-hour movie, who gives a shit, right?
Right.
So like, it did seem a little quick that it's like, oh, we showed up in Purgatory. Normally there would be some sort of
Homer.
Dante, some sort of Dante type adventure where you've got to travel through rings of hell or whatever to find your friend. No,
you just show up and he'll find you.
He finds you. He just rolls right up with a boat. Convenient.
Yeah. It's not even like the Odyssey where they go to hell and they got to like find Tiresias and, sacrifice a goat. It's just, you just show up and there he is.
Yeah. He just rolls up. They convince him, hey, you're not imagining things. This is where Will finally is revealed that, Lizzie had killed Jack.
One small bit that I like here from Sparrow, because he thinks everyone is just an illusion or a hallucination when they show up and say, hey, Jack, we're looking for you and all this stuff's happening. Yeah. So he talks to Mr. Gibbs. He talks to Will Turner. And then he sees Lizzie and he kind of recoils a little bit.
Right.
And that's when he starts to realize, oh, shit, this is like actually happening because right. she's the one who killed him.
Exactly.
I just thought that was a good bit.
It was nice. I did like that.
But yeah, this is where the cat's out of the bag where he says, oh, yeah, you know, four of you have tried to kill me. One of you did.
Yeah, exactly. And then Will's like, what? With his big stupid face.
Golly, I'm looking forward to later in the movie.
I know. So anyway, they get on.
No spoilers or anything.
No spoilers, says the podcast that only spoils things. So they hop into their boat. They take off. There's a really cool. Harry Potter moment where they see all the dead people in the water.
That's a Harry Potter moment?
It's like in a bunch of movies, but to me, in the Harry Potter book and sixth film, there's a whole lake full of dead people.
Oh, okay. Well,
which I did like. It was a little trite, but I did like how Tweedledee and Tweedledum are like, what do you think happens if we drop cannonballs on them? And I was like, oh, I kind of like that. I know it's stupid, but it's a little funny.
Exactly.
Then we see
Lizzie's dad. She finds out he's dead.
Okay.
And has a freak out moment.
Would you like to play Did Eden Cry?
Oh my gosh. Did you cry here?
I know. Can you believe it? I'll fully admit. Listen, I will fully admit. I cried at this part.
Well, I mean, she does well. They earn it. It's a good
this
scene.
This is her moment of being a legit actress. They also gave her something substantial to deal with, which
is... It wasn't about a man. Well, okay, it's about her dad, but you know what I mean. It's not about a romantic...
Exactly. It's not about a romantic seance. Entanglement.
Yeah.
But also, the only part that I didn't particularly care about it is I, you know, so we have all the little tiny rowboats with lanterns on them. It's a great shot. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, our heroes on the boat are like, listen, they've accepted their fate. They're going off into the afterworld or whatever. And that's when she sees her dad. And then she has a conversation with her dad where he like kind of drops a few exposition points where I'm like,
oh, there's a lot of big information dropped in this.
Yeah.
Scene.
I was like, that feels a little forced personally. I feel like if he's dead, he should just be like, Elizabeth, I love you. Like, bye. You know, I didn't.
But it seemed to me like he was trying to cope with the circumstances of his death. Like, this is why they killed me. He seems kind of dumb, but I guess I just got to deal with it now. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Go ahead. I was going to continue. Okay. Well, this is where we get another big bit of development of Davy Jones's backstory. So Davy Jones, instead of just being the Lord of the Damned, you know, with his cursed crew and he shanghais you into service, turns out he has a job to do and he just hadn't been doing it.
Yeah.
He is supposed to ferry those that die at sea to the afterlife,
correct,
but he hasn't been doing it.
Nope.
Because, you know, Calypso told him to do this and he just said, fuck that, and I'm not going to do it.
I can only imagine that in the meantime, not only is he not doing his job, but he's been telling them, hey, if you don't want me to take you there, if you're not ready for death, you could just work for me for 100 years. So he's scamming people to continue to work for him.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because he's basically supposed to be tending the locker, it seems like.
Correct.
You know, getting these people there, I guess, safe. They're getting there anyway, it seems like, but, you know, maybe there's a different method.
I don't know he's at supposed what point to be doing. We want to kind of run down the quick history. We'll get to it a little bit later, I think. I was going to say the quick history of the events in order.
Because I'm kind of confused on some of that.
So same thing where I kept like, because they're dropping little hints here of like the history between Calypso and Davy Jones and what Davy Jones got there, what now his job is and what he hasn't been doing, what he should be doing. And all of a sudden we learn that his heart is broken, but how did it get broken? And so you're giving all these little bits and it's not truly in the like most nuanced way, but it did take me a little bit to fully develop that story into the end. So maybe we can chat about that in a little bit.
Yeah. It's like, you know what happened, but it's hard to piece together the order of operations.
Yeah, correct. So what do we got next?
Like you'd mentioned, her dad drops the bit of exposition about whoever stabs the heart of Davy Jones becomes the captain of the Flying Dutchman.
So I felt like that shouldn't have been him that dropped that bit of exposition. It means nothing coming from him.
Right. Well, that's to me, like I said, that's the reason he learned that. And that's why they killed him. They didn't want him to know that information.
Oh, my bad. I totally missed that. Then it does make sense, I guess.
Yeah, because he had overheard them talking about that and he was asking questions about the chest and the heart.
Oh,
and so that's why they kill him. So that's why I said, oh, well, that's him coming to terms with the fact that
sure.
why they killed him.
Which actually,
so that makes sense to me.
The one bit that I enjoyed at the end of that, so I was wrong. I agree. Now that exposition does make sense.
Jack Hughes.
So he gives us the very pertinent exposition that apparently he does know and it makes sense. But Lizzie turns to Teodama and is like, can you bring him back? And she says, no, he's accepted his fate, which I think is a good distinction because they actually ask this question. I don't remember if it's here or later, where it's like, well, you brought back Barbossa. Why can't you bring back Jack? And that's why she's like, well, Jack isn't dead. Jack is in purgatory, essentially.
Yeah.
So that's why we're allowed to bring him back. We also learn that she can't bring back people that have accepted death or going to it willingly.
Exactly.
So they are setting up rules for, you know, some of the magic that's in this world that I enjoy.
For being the third part, they are doing a lot of initial setup for the backbone of the world now.
Which I know. I wish they would have.
I feel like they could have done or should have done some of this earlier.
Correct.
But I mean, the first movie you figured was just going to be standalone, and then two and three. I don't know. It would have been hard to do that in the second one. But
I agree, because actually,
because there's a lot going
on. One of the biggest differences I found between the second and third movie is that the second movie I felt like was like really cool and cheeky and a little bit mysterious in the way that it was seeding these plots that you're like, I know that's a thing. They haven't described it yet, but I know that's a thing that will come of something later. Whereas in this, it's like, hey, here's this thing. We're not going to try and pretend what it is. It's just, we're going to give it to you on a plate.
Yeah, because we have to, because this is the one where everything gets wrapped up.
Yeah, exactly. Third act movie. So
they got to flip the hot shit pirate ship.
They do have to flip. I can't say it. Hot shit pirate ship.
Hot
shit pirate ship. I can't say it.
Alternate name of the podcast.
Shit. We could change it.
It's all right. You made that joke a couple weeks ago.
I know. We'll change it again. So I like, it's kind of stupid. I do like that Jack figures out what they should do. And so he starts running back and forth. People start following him. And then Gibbs is like, we're rocking the ship. And I'm like, why is he going along with this?
Right. Yeah. Sparrow doesn't tell anybody, hey, we need to rock the ship and get it upside down. He just starts making weird noises and bouncing around the ship because, you know, that's what he does.
They do get to a point when they get the ship tilting to a serious degree where they're running in the wrong direction. Like that would balance it, either that or they're trying to gain momentum. But like when it starts tipping like super far left, they run to the right before it's done tipping. I'm like, keep running to the right. And wouldn't your momentum tip the ship?
You know, I didn't pay that much attention during this part. I just assumed they knew what they were doing, but maybe they had a faux pas.
No, I'm sure that they did. But either way, so they do flip the ship. We're capsized.
Yes, completely 100%, 180 degree capsized.
And I held my breath the whole time that they were holding their breath because it made me so anxious. I don't like water like that. And
could you do it?
Could I do it? No fucking way.
Oh,
be on a magic ship that would flip upside down and then flip right side out? No, I don't know if I could
do that,
Sam.
I was just talking about in terms of, can you hold your breath as long as they did? But I guess the answer is no.
Absolutely not. No, I would freak the fuck out. So they flip the ship, and then when the sun goes down, bam, they get the green light.
Yep.
That they talked about, the green flash. And then the ship,
Basically inverts. You know, there's a cool shot of the water coming down onto the ship.
Yeah.
And then the ship shoots out into the real world.
Yes.
And they're
it's
back.
Sunrise.
Yes.
At that point. Correct. Because there's a whole thing about up is down, sunset, sunrise, blah, 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 whatever. Anyway,
we skimmed over
baby.
Because there's a lot going on.
So they're back in the real world. We spent just a little bit of time in purgatory in the locker, and we're back.
And so we've got a brief confrontation here where Barbossa is like, all right, Jack, we're going to Shipwreck Cove, which is a cool name.
Very cool.
Because the Brethren Court's collecting, you're one of the pirate guys. You got to get your ass over there.
Yeah.
Jack Sparrow just wants to get the hell out of Dodge and be left alone because he doesn't want Davy Jones's Kraken to come after him.
Yep.
And then, of course, Will wants the pearl. And then Keira Knightley or Lizzie, who the hell knows what she wants at this point? Because
she doesn't want anything. She's a woman.
She want a man? Yeah, that must be what she wants.
They gave it to her at the end.
Anyway, we'll get to that creepy part.
Oh, you know what I actually wrote down on this? I was like, oh shit, the Kraken is washed ashore. And so you see that. And I was like, can you imagine the smell?
Yeah, that's true. It's got to smell really bad.
Chow Yun Fat's crew is back and they have a ship.
Yeah.
And they're back and they do, because they were...
Will Turner screwed them over. This was the rendezvous point where they had agreed to meet Chow Yun Fat.
That's right.
So they go there. They find, you know, the Kraken washed up. This is where they're hitting really hard on the capitalism is killing all the magic in the world.
Right. That's right.
I forget what the line is. about, oh, the world's becoming smaller. No, the world's not becoming smaller. There's just less in it.
That's a great line.
Which again, they earned a bad joke for that.
That was good.
I don't know which one, but you know, we'll get
during
there.
During that scene, somebody had said it was a gamble of long odds, which I actually liked that line.
Barbossa.
It was Barbossa.
If it's a good line, it's probably Barbossa.
It's definitely Barbossa. I also wrote down that Lizzie and Will are a shitty couple. They can't communicate for shit.
They're terrible.
They're fucking terrible together. So
one of them, guess what's coming to him.
So little man Beckett.
Yeah, basically. So Will's trap is sprung. Sal Fang takes control of everything because, you know, Will handed it over to him.
Yeah.
Gosh, I forget who all goes where. They split everybody up.
Confusing. There's so many.
Basically, Lizzie ends up with I'm thinking further ahead.
I know. So what I wrote down
here. Sparrow ends up with Beckett.
Yes, because they have drinks out of tiny brandy glasses.
Yes, that is true.
And they're very adorable. I was like,
Well, they're appropriately sized for small hands.
And this is where they mention the 9 pieces of 8, and Beckett describes that that's what he wants. He wants to know what they are, but he wants them.
Yeah. So Beckett and Sparrow make a deal. Sparrow screws over the pirates at Shipwreck Cove in exchange for getting his ass.
It's a whole lot of people getting on this boat, then they're on this boat, then they're on this boat. There's so much.
So while this is going on.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, there's so much stuff. So Barbossa is saying, hey, I'm going to free Calypso because she was trapped in human form by the first pirate court. And they are the 9th or 14th. I forget. It's the 14th pirate. Anyway, so he says that's his plan. So we got to get to Shipwreck Cove. And so it's intimated here that Lizzie is Calypso, which is a very poor tease because it doesn't at all feel genuine. But Chow Yun-Fat buys it hook, line, and sinker.
That's why I felt like that part was so confusing, where very shortly after this, where you see she's once again culturally
check appropriating. Number 2 on the appropriation list.
And she is in very beautiful Asian garb, but doesn't belong to her. And Chow Yun-Fat comes in and refers to her as Calypso. And I was like, oh, that's what he thought? Because in the previous scene, like you were mentioning, Barbossa's like, we got Barbossa on this ship. Or not Barbossa. We've got Calypso on this ship. And everybody looks at Lizzie. And I was like, are they trying to sell this? Because they didn't.
They're trying to sell it. And well, Barbossa looks back at her like, oh, that's what he thinks? Okay, we'll let him go with this. And he's like, you can have her.
Yeah.
So it was, he kind of used her a little bit.
But she went along with it. She was like, if this saves our lives, I'll fucking do it. I'm like, ugh. God.
Yeah, whatever.
God, they did her dirty in this.
Will sucks,
so
too.
They've got her, and then something happens where,
they split up. So they've got, Sal Fang and his crew go one way, and they're chased by the Dutchman.
Yeah.
The Black Pearl goes the other way, and they were going to be chased by the Endeavor, I think is what it's called. Beckett's ship
British.
Is. Well, it's British.
Endeavor.
But they get their shit knocked around, whatever, and they can't follow. So, there's so much plot.
I fucking hate this,
I'm getting myself so confused.
I wrote all this shit down. It still means nothing to me.
I'm trying to get my head
on
straight.
Can you believe that they wrote this goddamn movie? I mean,
like when you're watching it is, I don't know. How do they keep this straight? I feel like the Charlie Day meme where he's got all the lines straight on the conspiracy theory and I'm screaming and scratching my hair out. There's just.
Because this is what I was saying
moving pieces
at the top where I'm like, they could have taken out a lot of this back and forth. They could have simplified the plot, still had, they're here and there because it's a very mobile movie. People are in ships.
Yeah.
But they could have done that and then developed some of the characters in light of introducing he goes here and then this goes here and then this blows up and then they have a fight here and then there's this and then a little exposition sprinkle and then he goes here and then she goes here.
All right. So I'm going to focus on Sal Fang.
Got it. Yeah,
Sal Fang has Lizzie, who he thinks is Calypso.
And
he gets a little rapey.
Very objectively rapey. He just puts his face on her fucking face and like attacks her. And I was like, Christ, guys.
So that's like number 2 or 3 on the creepy Keira Knightley thing.
At least number three.
An upskirt shot. Well, you don't see it, but there's the upskirt thing in Sal Fang's little bathhouse. There is the disrobe, please. And then in this one. So that's at least 3, maybe 4, let's say, on the creepy Keira Knightley scenes.
I know. It's quite creepy.
So anyway, the Dutchman finally attacks, kills Sal Fang. Sal Fang makes her the captain of his ship to hand along his piece of 8, which is necklace.
Yep.
So, that's where we leave that crew.
Yep. Done. Thank you. That was very succinct.
Thank you. So on the other ship now, Will is trying to get the Endeavor to follow them to Shipwreck Cove because he's trying to, I forget why exactly he's doing that.
Yeah, I wrote it down. I wrote, Will is guiding the East India Company to the Pearl.
Yeah, so Depp comes along, finds him. What he's doing is very macabre, by the way. Will is tying dead British bodies to barrels and dumping them in the ocean so that the trail of seagulls eating the bodies will lead them
that way. Macabre. I was like, this movie just got dark. But also, after I wrote down, Will is guiding the EIC to the Pearl, I just wrote down, I'm bored.
So basically, Sparrow comes along, sees that he's doing this. And since Sparrow's wanting the East India Company to come along too, because that's part of his deal, he basically gives Will the compass, shoves him off the boat so that, you know, the compass that points to wherever your heart wants most, which apparently what Beckett wants most is Johnny Depp, which they don't say why.
Because he's fucking hot for him, baby.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm going to go with the jilted lover's angle.
And, I think so. You know, it has to be.
Why not?
Why else?
Anyway, so he kicks him off. They go to Shipwreck Cove. Will's with the other guys. They're going to Shipwreck Cove. I think that's basically where we're at next, right?
Christ, I'm so confused. There's a scene where Norrington...
There's got to be.
I don't know.
Oh, no. Norrington gets command of the Flying Dutchman because they bring the heart on board the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah.
Which, okay, Davy Jones is playing his organ with his face tentacles because it's the coolest shit ever. And he's playing the music box. And he like pauses and because he realizes that he started to cry.
Oh, I hate that scene.
Really?
Yeah, I hated it.
See, I love that because that's how he realizes that the heart is near because he's starting to feel again.
Oh, I just took it as being really cheesy.
I mean, you could think it's cheesy all you want.
No, I think you're actually correct. I think it works because
you know, as soon as he comes up and sees the chest, he's like, I don't want that thing on my ship. Get it off of here because he doesn't want to feel that way.
Right. No, you're absolutely correct.
Norrington and a detachment of British soldiers are now on the Flying Dutchman. Which, question though, and this is just now occurring to me, this ship is a submarine.
Yeah. If the British soldiers are on it,
why don't you just submerge and drown all of them?
Yeah.
They're not going to really be focused on stabbing your heart if they're drowning to death.
This movie would have been over too quickly.
I think they
David
should
Jones
have
would have
done
won the
that.
Movie and done. This is our rewrite. This is excellent.
Yeah, rewrite. Davy Jones kills everybody. The end.
Christ. Yeah. So it's a very.
Can I say that Davy Jones is the hero of these movies?
Davy Jones is the hero of these movies. And so would you like to now maybe just discuss the backstory between Calypso and Davy Jones?
Yes, because I think this is where it starts to get more.
They start to explain us, but here's what we learn. So Tia Dama, our voodoo priestess that showed up in the second movie, is significantly a part of this one. We learn that she is the goddess Calypso, and goddess Calypso has been bound to this human body.
Yep.
What we learn is that Davy Jones, who was a regular man, sailor person, fell in love with her.
And she fell in love with him. Which was described in the second movie when they talk about the story. Oh, he fell in love with the sea. He fell in love with a girl.
And she says
the many stories are different versions, but all are true.
Exactly.
Because she was the sea goddess.
Correct. So from what I take from this, the history of their relationship is this. They fall in love with each other. She says, we can be together, but you've got to do a job for me, essentially.
Yeah.
You've got to ferry people. From the land of the people that are dying at sea, you ferry them to the afterworld.
Yep.
And he tasks her with this. And she says, and then in 10 years, I'll meet you on land and we can be together. And he loves her. So he says, yes. So he takes the job. He does it for 10 years. Then he goes on land and bitch ghosts him.
Yeah.
She does not show up. His heart breaks.
Yep.
So what he does is he doesn't want to feel that pain anymore. So he cuts out his heart and he no longer does the job.
Yeah.
Also, after he has cut out his heart and says, I don't want to feel anymore. I'm no longer going to do this job because fuck you.
Yeah.
That's when, because his intentions are about revenge. That's when the sea barnacles start growing on him. He and his crew start morphing into other things. Their ship looks more decrepit. And also he convinces the brethren that we must bind Calypso. So he teaches them how to bind her into a body of a mortal human. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at.
Yes, that is basically the backstory.
Got it.
The question I have about all this sequence of events is why then, if you have a new captain of the Flying Dutchman, do you have to cut out his heart? Because that was done theoretically, at least as we have surmised, after she gave him the job.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because he wouldn't have cut out his heart if he was still in good terms with Calypso.
No, absolutely. He did it out of pain.
Times. Yeah.
Don't know if it's just that the, because the thing, I mean, the idea of a ferryman that ferries, I forget the Greek person whose name that is. I mean, that's a very longstanding archetype.
And I forget his name.
Yeah,
damn
I forget
it.
His name too. But that's a longstanding archetype in mythology, right? Yes. That there is a ferryman that, that transfers people over to the land of the dead. Mm-hmm. So this is not a new thing. So the thing is, perhaps there was another person that held that job before him and she just gave him the job or whatever it is. Could be that there's always a ferryman. So because there was a Davy Jones, there must be another person after Davy Jones, right? Mm-hmm. But that you're right. That still doesn't answer why you must cut the heart out. Maybe he just set a precedent and that's the way it fucking works from now on.
I guess.
I mean.
Setting legal precedent.
There
Got
you
it.
Go. So.
Right, so
we
now,
do learn that nine to bind her, nine to set her free. So we learn that if you get the nine pieces of eight together, that this is how Barbossa plans to release her from her human form.
Yes. So like we said, actually, there's a part that I skipped when we were talking about Lizzie and the crew of Sal Fang's crew. They were taken aboard the Flying Dutchman because the Flying Dutchman attacked their ship, killed Sal Fang. So all of them are prisoners now on the Flying Dutchman.
Mm-hmm.
So she meets old Bootstrap, Lizzie
does. Yeah.
And this is where, I'm trying to think of the sequence of events. It's pretty much reiterated several times, just in case you weren't paying attention, that whoever kills Davy Jones has to take his place.
Correct. Yes.
So he's like Bootstrap saying, oh, well, he wouldn't choose me because he's got you. And
yes.
So he's going to leave me. So just forget about
it. Yeah.
Me.
Why would
just
he destroy his heart when his heart can thrive when he's with you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great scene. I mean, Skarsgård
really
kills it there.
Stellar skateboard, man.
And then Norrington grows a conscience, decides to let her and their crew go.
That's right. He kisses her again. There's
yep.
another fucking man that puts his face on her fucking face.
Yep. So that's like number four or five now.
I mean, she's a beautiful woman, but is she the only woman in this world?
Because she's not the village bicycle. Not everyone should have a ride.
Not everyone should, but everybody's sure trying.
Yeah.
But
Norrington gets killed by Bootstrap.
He does.
And so.
I didn't really like that he went out that way, but I was whatever.
He's
fine.
A bitch. He was a better character in the second movie.
Oh, he's way better in the second one. I'm not debating that. I just kind of liked him better, although he didn't have that rad beard in this, so he already has got a demerit for that.
Well, he was kind of back to his first movie, you know, white bread douchebaggery.
She did give him shit about picking sides, and he obviously picked the douchebag side.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he wanted his papers, wanted to get back in good graces of little man.
Yeah. So,
so I think we're now at Shipwreck Cove.
Yes, we are jumping to Shipwreck Cove.
So let's talk about the
visual design of Shipwreck Cove, which
is
amazing.
Fucking rad. So if we can briefly describe it to people that haven't seen it, it is basically it's into this like giant cavernous cave, and it is just a pile of ships.
Yes.
That have been crashed upon one another and making this mountain, and they've developed them into a city upon itself.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, like, if you can just imagine like going through that thing, like how fucking cool that would be.
Yeah, it's got to be really awesome.
Really, really cool. I love that. Yeah, there's a couple of wide shots of it, and it's obviously all in CG, but it looks rad.
Yeah, whoever did that concept art or came up with it deserves a medal.
I agree. That was
great,
really, really cool.
Great piece. And you're thinking that Shipwreck Cove is just a name. No, it's literally because they crash ships into each other to build this. So it's great in multiple levels. So basically now we are at the assemblage of the Brethren Court.
Correct.
Everyone except Captain Lizzie is there, who they do not know is captain yet. They're expecting
Sal
Fang.
Yeah.
Barbossa gives a hell of a speech here. About why he wants to free Calypso.
Yeah.
Because I should have written it down, but binding Calypso allowed men to take control of the sea, and that's helped pirates and everybody else, but it also has helped, you know, muddy grubbing douchebags like Beckett and everybody else. Whereas being, you know, a man of the sea, as it were, used to be about the strength of your arm and the how much you can carry on your back or whatever phrase. He does it much better than I do.
Sure.
But yeah, that part's great. And so the next thing I have is the Davy Jones Tia Dalma scene.
Well, hold on. I've got the fucking Keith Richards cameo.
Oh, I think that's a little later.
Is that
it?
Later?
Let me see. I've got.
No. You're right. Sorry. Because
yeah,
I wrote down she goes
until Captain Lizzie shows up.
Yeah, but
so
okay. So the scene
later.
Between.
Or do you want to just smash these two together? Why not? Because they're basically happening simultaneously.
They are happening simultaneously. If we were at all talking about Tia Dalma and Davy Jones, it basically is just giving the backstory of their love.
That's true.
That's it.
But I mean,
we already gave you guys the breakdown of what happened.
Yeah, but I think the scene's great. They have a great chemistry and relationship because Jones is very angry. Yep. Obviously, he has not talked to her since she stood him up.
Yep.
And that's been who knows how many hundreds of years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But they start talking and one thing or another, and she kind of touches his heart. Oh, you know, where his heart would be if he had it there. And it turns it back to like his human form. And he just starts to feel and do all this stuff. Like, basically, you can see through one conversation, his anger for her melts. It's just gone. I don't think it's a facade either. Because we actually skipped a whole other scene where basically Jones was saying he wants her murdered. But I think that was before this.
Well, you covered it. We're good.
I mean, we're not going back to it because there's too much going on.
But
this is, if I'm right, because there was a three-way scene between Orlando Bloom and Beckett and Jones where they're trying to talk about Shipwreck Cove and how to get there and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So that's where Jones is saying, oh, he wants Calypso murdered, where he gave the bit about the first Pirates Court,
right.
Brethren Court.
Sure.
So here, you could see he's angry, but by the end, he's just totally... He's basically given it all up. All the anger is gone because he's basically leaves the scene saying, you know, hey, my heart's always going to belong to you. And then boom, he's out. Mm-hmm.
I do like when he was like, you left me, you didn't show up. Like basically you ghosted me. And she was like, it's just the way I am. And I was like, whoa, what a fuck girl. Uh-uh. Like, I mean, I know I do like.
I like that she's honest. I mean, she's like, would you love me if I was anybody but who I am?
Yes. Which like sometimes if she was not a god. And she was a human that had that behavior. I'm like, oh, go fuck yourself. They're like, you're not worth anybody's fucking time. You just like, you think that everybody should bend to your will. You can't fucking tell me what to do. I just who I am. You can't make me change. Well, fine. Nobody fucking asked you to change. Relax.
Right.
But I do like the fact that she is a vindictive god. It felt very much like kind of like Norse mythology, more so than Greek, I would say, where they have
they
more human
do her
characteristics.
Dirty in the, later in the movie, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, yep. So anyway, back to the Brethren, right? So.
Yes.
Barbossa's like, we need to release Calypso. And then all of a sudden, fucking Captain Lizzie walks in again in a third outfit she should not be wearing.
Cha-ching!
Now, listen, as much as I love that style of hat, I don't know the name of it.
It's a, you know, presumably Chinese hat.
It's fucking rad. She should not be wearing it. Should not be wearing it at all. She shows up and she's like, oh, guess what? I'm the last captain. Now, if you want to make any decisions, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And... what do they do? They look at the code first. This is where stupid Keith Richards shows up.
Well, yeah, what they're doing, they're looking to the code is that Barbossa says in order to declare war, which is what this would be, them assembling and fighting the East India Trading Company, they need a pirate king. And they're like, no, that's bullshit. And they're like, all right, look up the code. And out Keith Richards comes with the Pirata Codex, which is a silly name,
I know, but I like it.
And the music here is very choral, like it's some sort of holy relic.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny and it's like oddly fitting. But yeah, it's Keith Richards. They finally hang the lampshade because Keith Richards is who Johnny Depp based his performance on.
Correct. So anybody that wasn't aware of that, that's why this is like the tonguest of tongue in cheek. It's not even tongue in cheek. It's just overt.
Oh, yeah. They just hang the lampshade. They're like, here's why he's acting like this.
I fucking hated it. And then... he comes in with the giant book, the Codex. They fucking realize that, oh, yeah, there can be a king. And then Barbossa's like, no, we can fucking vote. Doesn't matter because every single pirate is going to vote for themselves. So there's never going to be an answer.
Yep.
Well, Jack decides because he wants to go fight them.
No, part of his deal with Beckett was that, hey, you go to Shipwreck Cove, I'll get all the pirates
out.
You kill them and I get the hell out of Dodge.
There you go. So in order to draw them out, he's like, well, we got to go fight because the other pirates are like, well, we can just hole up in here. We're good. Like, they're going to wreck their ships, guys.
Yeah.
Hence the name of where we are. So in order to get that, because he's convinced Lizzie that that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lizzie says, hey, we've got to fight. And so Depp, to agree with her, votes instead of himself. And so winning the popular vote of two votes to everybody else's one.
Fucking white girl becomes the pirate king.
Yeah.
I'm so over it.
To be fair, it's almost more of an honorary title. But
yeah, because like later in the movie, Barbossa's like, fuck your fucking kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
but I hate what he wants. I hate the Keith Richards thing. It's just total fan service. It's stupid. And then after they make this decision that they're going to go fight, Jack saunters back over to Keith Richards and he's like, yeah, dad, how's mom? And I'm like, ugh, then they made him his dad.
Yeah. And also his mom's head has been shrunk.
Yeah. It's just, it was so unnecessary. It wasn't a ton of time, but it just truly was like, get the
fuck
out of here.
It's one of those where they ground the movie to a halt to make a joke and it does not land. This segment is where they started a bunch of obnoxious callbacks to the first movie.
Yeah, that's what I wrote down. Callback Central.
Yeah, they have the dog with the key. Ugh. And they've got the
turtles.
Yeah, they talk about sea turtles a whole bunch.
Yeah,
they talk later on. There's a reference to the type of hinge in the Flying Dutchman's brig.
Call
there
back
is
Central.
You've got those two Disney duo British idiots in this one because they weren't in the second movie.
No, they weren't,
to my knowledge.
Nope.
Yeah, they're trying really hard to make you remember the first movie, which at this point, the first movie does not matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
To the story, it has no bearing.
No effect whatsoever. That's so funny. I wrote that exact same thing down on my notes. We do have that now all of a sudden our pirate council, which will now consist of Barbossa, Lizzie, the fucking pirate king, and Jack. They go onto a sandbar to meet up with Will Turner, Beckett, and Davy Jones, who's standing in a bucket of water.
Because he's not on land.
He's not. We're going to come back to this later in the movie.
But when you think of the, it's goofy, it's funny. But when you think about how it actually happened, you're saying, how does that work? Did they carry him and place him in the water?
And I go, let's just hold for a second. Before they started rolling, let's pretend that this is a documentary. Let's pretend that fucking Will has to be like, all right, you get on my back. Beckett, you just drag the bucket out there. And so he's got to give him a piggyback ride till he can go stand in a bucket of water.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that he had a couple of his guys kind of wash up. But Davy Jones
would you
did.
Assume that?
And then, I don't because they
it's
can
so much
just,
funnier to make Will fucking give him a piggyback ride.
Okay,
or
I agree.
Carry him like a fireman or like a damsel in distress, in his arms in front of him.
Exactly.
I like that even better. Yeah, it's very silly. They have this stupid showdown on this sandbar where they basically discuss terms before going to war.
Yep.
And they make a fucking trade. So we'll trade Jack for Will.
Yeah, so Will's back in Shipwreck Cove and, Jack's back with Davy Jones.
God,
and
I fucking hate this.
Beckett.
This is so much shit.
There's so many moving pieces and it's not very necessary.
Mm-mm.
I tend to just skip around at this point.
Wrote down I'm bored with 18 E's and D's.
At this point, there was still an hour left in the movie.
I
stopped to pee and I'm like, you're starting to set up act three and you have an hour left.
I know. It is fucking nuts. So I also, I scrolled through some notes where I just kind of wrote down the backstory between Davy Jones and Calypso. I wrote, damn, Lizzie is not good in this.
Basically, all the pirates come out. That's where we're at next.
All the pirates come out and they see that they're nine ships for our nine pirates, right?
Right.
They realize they are up against 100 ships of the East India Trading Company.
Oh, and we'll be coming back to this.
Yeah. So Lizzie decides to give the speech of all speeches.
And she is horrible at it.
She's not
good
at it.
It's her screeching for about 3 solid minutes and it hurts my ears. Don't misread me here. I am not saying that a woman cannot deliver the big, climatic, emotional, bombastic, rousing speech.
Right.
She can't.
She's not doing a great job in this movie. You're right. She doesn't have the gusto in this scene to really express that sentiment.
And
the
honestly,
music swells to try and make up for it. And Will has a massive hard on while he's watching her. He's like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's no. I think her register is too high in order to be able to pull it off. If you had a woman with a lower register, I think this would land more. Not to say that she has to be more masculine. I just don't think she works. I can't explain.
She does have a really lovely voice, but she has a voice that I think is very well fitting and very effective in kind of whispery scenes.
Yeah.
I don't know, every other British movie performance she's given, I feel like she's very effective in that. So yeah, she's just, it's also, this is a silly movie, I don't think everybody's given it 100,000,000%, but
because even Bill Nye, they're not giving him much to do.
They don't give him shit to do in this movie. It's a real bummer. And it's not him. It's not about his performance.
No, it's about the material.
It's about the material.
What's written on the page is not anywhere. Aside from that one scene with Tia Delma.
Right. Exactly.
Other than that, he doesn't have a ton.
So anyway, Pirates decides to fight. She gives a big rousing speech. But before they start to fucking fight, they gather all of their pieces of nine.
Pieces of eight.
Oh, my bad. Nine pieces of eight. 9 pieces of 8. And they release Calypso from her human form, which is she's just a big woman.
Yeah, she. Yeah, that's how she first getting lots of Gulliver's Travels.
I know.
You know, energy from this scene. But before, you know, or as she's being, before she becomes a big woman, basically Will Turner says, oh, Davy Jones is the one that told them how to trap you, which you think, oh, this is going to pay off. No, there's no payoff to that. She gets a little upset for a second.
Yeah.
And then she turns into a bunch of crabs, goes in the water, makes a maelstrom, and that's all she does.
That's all she does.
They huge disservice for all this buildup.
Yeah, totally.
She where it's like, just becomes a storm.
Yeah. Where I'm like, see more, I don't know, either more rage out of that even, like something else, or like, because really, we'll get to the end. Basically, there's just a big fucking fight, right? So, like, the Flying Dutchman and the Black Pearl are spinning in this maelstrom, in this, like, fucking swirling whirlpool.
So, one thing, before we get into the to's and fro's of this final action scene, we described how many ships there were here.
Yeah.
This climax involves three ships.
I know. That means the other 97 ships on the side.
The other 97 British ships and the other eight pirate ships just sit there.
Chilling.
There is nothing. What the hell is all of this? This finale is broken in that respect.
Yeah, it is 100%.
Because they build up, oh, this is going to be huge. This is going to be massive. And it's just not. Just take out all that other stuff then. Don't have all this crap if you're not going to use it.
Show a one-on-one battle. Show that this.
Of course, you need to base it in some sort of center conflict, right. But show that the rest is going on.
Yeah, exactly. Show like the battle going on in the background, because they fill the screen with like, God, there's so much swirling and weird angles because the ships are at weird angles and there's flying around and then there's jumping and there's wind and there's water. I mean, there's so much to fucking look at in this. And it's truly too long, I felt. And overwhelming, because it's like this guy jumps here and then this guy jumps here, and again they're swinging back and forth between ships. Like, I couldn't even keep it straight if I tried. I wrote, so here we go.
Can I say one quick thing? So I'll make a quick note, though. I do love Jones's response. Like, the storm starts up and he like turns real rapidly and it starts to rain on him, and he realizes that it's Calypso. Her. And he's like, then he gets jazzed. Like, he's like, this is my shit now. I got this shit.
Yeah, he's into it. He's definitely into it.
I love that bit. Mm-hmm. And then when they're going into the maelstrom, which is just a big water tornado.
Yeah,
basically. He's saying, hey, we're going to go straight into it. And Captain, or right hand, sorry. Yeah. It's just like, are you crazy? We're going to do that?
And
no, wait.
A fun way.
No, well, we're going to get to that. I'm actually jumping ahead of myself a little bit. He basically just goes full bore and into the abyss. I don't know why I love that line.
Yeah, it's
just
great.
Yeah. And then Captain, golly, I'm getting myself tripped up now.
It's very confusing.
Right hand is, I'm just tripping over my words because I'm having one of those days. But right hand is just like, oh, crazy. You know, you're crazy, blah, blah, blah. And, oh, you're afraid you're going to get wet, which was really, you're going to give Davy Jones that line.
I know, right? Yeah, really stupid.
Anyway,
so it just
continue
it's
as you
a lot
were.
Of fucking fighting. Like I said, they're both swirling around each other while apparently the other boats are just waiting it out to get tagged in.
Yeah, they're just sitting there doing nothing,
just chilling. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of, you know, like there are cannons being shot. There are sword fights. They're swinging around. There's, you know, whatever. Like Barbossa is, got to say, fucking captaining the fuck out of this ship.
Oh, he is. He's the one driving. He knows exactly
number
what's going
one captain
on.
To me. He's great. So, while all this is going on, fucking Bonehead Will goes, Elizabeth, marry me.
Yeah.
I fucking hate this. You should read my notes. He goes, will you marry me? And I wrote, come on. And I go, they are no good together, Will. And I wrote, you dummy, Barbossa. Because they look and Barbossa is fighting adjacent to them. And they say, Barbossa, will you marry us? And I wrote down, I hate this. Ugh, I hate this. And I go, okay, the slow-mo makeout is fine. But like, right. I fucking hate this.
Yeah, it would have worked if their relationship had actually been functional.
It wasn't really like rectified at all.
No, the concept is great. Like, you know, having this big high-stakes action scene wedding. I get that. But between these two characters, it does not work.
No, not at all. Their relationship.
Certainly not right now.
No, their relationship has been shit this whole time.
Yeah, because they're both double dealing and hiding shit from each other for the last two movies.
Absolutely. Yeah, they just can't communicate. It's not cool. So anyway, Barbossa marries them on the ship while they're fighting. And then there's a slow-mo makeout scene, which is fine. There's some kind of quip that she says, because I just wrote, ugh. Do you remember what it is? I don't remember what it is.
Nope.
Bad joke. But
anyway,
this is where you said, like, not only were there a ton of callbacks earlier, but now it's like things are being reintroduced, like the knife. Like, yes. Bootstrap Bill's knife is being reintroduced.
To be fair, he did pull it on Sal Fang beginning in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Because that's the one knife he uses for everything now, even though it looks to be as dull as a butter knife.
It actually looks just like a butter knife. But he just like pokes somebody with it.
Yeah. Can we say that you had mentioned it earlier, but I want to make sure that we talk about it, is how Davy Jones kills right hand.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he face fucks him with his mouth, with his face tentacles, and kills him. It's so awesome.
It was pretty great.
Yeah.
I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job, Davy Jones. So Davy Jones eventually boards the Pearl.
No.
He gets on the same ship as them.
Yeah, but they go on to the Dutchman.
Oh, my bad. They go on to the Dutchman. Okay.
Yeah. Will goes on to the Dutchman. Jack Sparrow's on the Dutchman. And then Lizzie comes on the Dutchman. Yeah. And you're having this big climatic battle.
So Lizzie and Will get knocked aside. And then you see Davy Jones walk up to Will and he's about to stab him. He goes, oh, and he catches a moment between them because they've just been married or whatever. And now they like each other.
He feels the mad hard on energy between the two.
Yeah. Can you feel the love tonight? And he feels it. And yeah. he goes, love, what a dreadful bond. That was a great line.
Yeah, he's so great.
And then, oh shit, he stabs Will in the heart.
He kills Will.
Bye,
this
Will.
Is my best part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Well, the moment he does it is great too, because he's getting ready to kill Will. And then Sparrow's gotten hold of the heart and he's holding his little sword to it. He's like, okay, I'm going to kill you. You know, get ready for it.
Yep.
And he's like, okay, fine. He turns around and kills Will first. Yep. He's like, all right, now what are you going to do, bitch?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Sorry.
You going to kill me and then leave this guy to die? What are you going to do?
Yeah. So I don't know. There's like some back and
Bootstrap
forth.
Bootstrap comes along because he fought Will a second or two earlier.
Yeah.
And he was kind of zombified.
Sure.
Comes to his senses, sees the knife, mm-hmm. the MacGuffin knife. And fights Davy Jones or distracts him long enough for Depp or Sparrow to run over to Will's corpse.
Yes.
Grab his hand and have Will stab the heart.
Yes.
And so
because he, as I wrote down, turns out Jack has a heart, both literally and figuratively.
Oh, there you go. Clever. So my interest in these movies now has dropped to zero because they kill the best character. The villain definitely wins. Davy Jones is the hero.
Davy Jones is the hero.
He wasn't even in the first movie, but he was the hero.
He was the hero of that movie. And he has now been killed. And
I have like no notes after this because I quit caring.
I just wrote down there's a parachute moment where fucking Jack and Lizzie, because Will is dead, but he's somehow stabbed the heart with the help of Jack, right? Davy Jones has fallen into the sea and has given himself and he's dead. Done. You're gone. Bye.
Yeah. And the maelstrom stops because I guess that was
Calypso being mad. I'm down, I guess. Whatever.
I don't.
Anyway,
knows?
So somehow a parachute made of goo is made and Jack and fucking Lizzie escape and the Dutchman dives under the ocean. I hate the parachute part. It was super, super stupid. It was supposed to be a sad moment and they made it look super silly. Beckett's a big, dumb, bad guy. And all of a sudden the Endeavor that he is on is wedged between. Oh, wait, hold on.
Yeah. So the Endeavor is going to finish off the Pearl because it's just the two of them. You don't see the Dutchman.
Yeah.
The Dutchman pops back up. And then, surprise, Will's captain the Dutchman, and he's wearing an awful lot of eye makeup.
And he sure has that fancy headscarf on.
So, yeah, they were approaching each other. They turn, they surround the Endeavor, and they just blow it to
They
fuck.
Obliterate it. And
yeah,
so
they just totally destroy
stupid
it.
Stupid slow-mo shots of Beckett getting blown up. Didn't care. He wasn't significant. Whatever.
Yeah, like I said, he was an afterthought.
Yeah, I do like how everyone yells fire instead of just the captains and their first mate. All of a sudden, everybody's yelling fire. I'm like, we all get to do that now? Okay.
It's like, I understand the captain and I understand Mr. Gibbs because he was underneath the deck.
Sure, of course.
So they could let them know. But like, why is Lizzie screaming it? There are no cannons on the top of the deck.
That's what I'm saying. Fucking everybody gets to yell fire. I mean, she is the pirate king. I guess you got to give it to her.
And then, of course, it was showing celebration shots of all the pirates who didn't do anything.
Did nothing.
So why, golly,
and they
I just
go,
hate.
The fleet is turning around.
Why? You have 100 ships. They have 9. Just kill all of them.
Purely a numbers game, they would have won. I mean, like, truly.
Like, oh my gosh. It's broken. It is a broken finale.
So to wrap it up quickly, Stellar Skateboard decides to stay on the ship because Will goes, I can release you from your infinity service. And he goes, yeah, but like, no, I kind of want to hang out with you and I like I owe something. And so father and son are going to stay on the Dutchman together. Somebody calls Lizzie Mrs. Turner, which I thought was like, ish, whatever. But I did like that Tweedledum called her Poppet and he said goodbye to her.
Again, callbacks. Got to have more callbacks to the first movie. The only movie that has more obnoxious callbacks than this is Avengers Endgame. Bam.
Okay, I can only imagine.
It's so bad. Hot takes. Hot takes. Burning my hands.
I did kind of like her goodbye with Jack, where she parrots back his words to him, where she's like, it never would have worked out between us.
Yeah.
I thought it was cute. So anyway, Lizzie and Will be banging on a beach.
Yeah, and again, creepy orgasmo shot of Lizzie.
I know.
I guess Will does the mouth stuff.
I guess. Yeah, I know. It was. I was like, whoa, I don't remember this. And then, like, whatever. He's like, I gotta go. And I'm like, oh, Christ.
Yeah, you know, she's got an upside down mouth and she's got...
I forgot about upside down mouth.
Skeletor going on. I'm sorry. Like,
she's
I'm not trying
really
to...
pretty.
She is pretty, but... Gosh, I don't want to, you know, the term body shaming, I guess, but I'm sorry. She's really skinny. Girl, eat a hamburger.
She's very thin. She is very thin.
And this is the scene where you're like, oh, they don't even try and cover up. She's just like a bed sheet walking around.
Surprisingly, actually, I noticed it more in a couple of scenes where she's wearing clothes that she should not be wearing. But she's wearing a belt. It's basically like a belted thing. And like because the belt emphasizes her waist, it's like teeny tiny. I'm like, Christ, girl. Anyway,
yeah, so,
and I just wrote down, okay, whatever. So they did it on
shit up.
They did it on the fucking beach. He gives her the chest because she's always had his heart. And then I wrote, this damn movie never fucking ends.
well, they're trying to wrap everything up.
They are. Side story.
Sidebar.
Sidebar. So, as mentioned earlier on the sandbar, Davy Jones just stood in a fucking bucket of water. I don't know why she's freaking out. It's not like she's not going to see him for 10 years. Put that bitch in a fucking bucket of water. She can see him on land whenever she wants.
I'm sorry. Give me that again.
Will, because yes. He is now Davy Jones or whatever his job is. The ferryman.
Yeah.
He can only come on land every 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're acting like it's like a big bummer. And I'm like, he can technically come on land whenever he wants, as long as he's in a fucking bucket. They've already
You're correct. I think what they're trying to say, though, is like basically that's his one day off for 10 years of work. he does have a physical limitation.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So you're saying that he should request more PTO?
Well, I'm just saying that like you know, there's a workaround. There's a cheat in the system.
That's true.
Where he could basically.
Now, do you think he'll get all like, do you think that Calypso is going to be all, oh, you took an extra day off here, have a squid face or whatever?
I mean, I don't know. That's a good question because.
I mean, how hard are
they
getting his timesheet going on or.
Calypso's like, it's time for a performance review. I can't help but notice.
You took 25 minutes to go to the bathroom.
He's like, I had to stand in a bucket. What do you fucking want?
So, yeah, you're right. There's workarounds if he really wanted to see her or, you know, he could pop up through the green flash, come to shore and she could just go on the boat.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Like, there's workarounds
here. There's fucking workarounds.
Like, but they wanted the mythologized, romanticized version of this story.
Yeah, and so the end scene is stupid. Jack loses the Black Pearl. He and Gibbs are stuck on wherever they're at.
Presumably Port Royal.
Port Royal. So they're there, but Jack has the map. The map that Barbossa wants that will lead us into the fourth movie that we will not watch, guys.
No,
don't
hell
it.
No.
It's
basically talking about the Fountain of Youth.
Exactly.
But fuck
so
the fourth movie
they're going to go to Florida Spring Break Pirates, baby. That's all I wrote down. question. The movie's over.
Oh, no. Did you see post-credit scene?
That was what I was going to ask. I didn't stick around, but is it the one where she's on the beach?
Yeah, her and her now 10-year-old son show up at the beach. The green flash pops along. The Flying Dutchman's coming to shore. You see Will has an age today and then end credits.
I remember that from seeing it, but I was waiting around today to watch it and it, like Disney Plus was doing a thing. And so I.
But yeah, it's just that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get to see, oh, he's got a kid now because I guess he's super effective at banging what's her face.
A one shot Will.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, guys. So
one shot Will, two pump jump. Got it.
So here we are at the end of our first spinoff series. Wowzers. An hour and 45 minutes we've been talking.
Do we even need to do top five characters in the franchise?
That's up to you. We can spin through it really quickly because we still got
I've got three. Well, actually, I've got four. But
you
even
go
then,
through
I can
yours
drop the fourth.
Because I didn't actually make this list. But I'd like to hear your take. You go ahead. I
number
think Davy Jones is going to be number one.
Oh, yeah, no shit. Like, come on. This is the most anticlimactic anything.
Yeah.
I've just got number three, Tia Dalma.
Yep.
She's great. her, Calypso, Davy Jones. It's all great. Number two, Barbossa.
Yeah.
He's just MVP also. And then, of course, number one, Davy Jones. He's the best, you know, in this franchise. And every movie is lesser for not having him in it.
See, you know what I really like is that I like Barbossa in this movie a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Barbossa was the big bad in the first movie. I did like him in that. He was fucking great. And especially, right. I mean, like, that's where, and you can go back and listen to our episode on the first Pirates movie. I mean, like, Johnny Depp was fucking rad. He's just not, it was such more of like an interesting and fresh perspective, an interesting performance we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And also we weren't used to it. And so they were kind of giving him more of like a character study type of performance. Whereas in these, it's just expected, you know? So like, but I felt like Barbossa was really good in this one.
Yeah.
He's gotta be up there for me as well. I mean, I don't know if you could top Bill Nye.
You can't. Just don't even try.
Bill Nye the Pirate Guy.
I had Gibbs at number four, but even then he didn't do a hell of a lot here. And then I couldn't even come up with a fifth one.
No, Gibbs is great. Yeah. Yeah, so there we go. My top five, and I didn't even put them in order, was going to be for top five MacGuffins throughout the top five items in the world, we'll say. Which my number one would be the nine pieces of eight.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's a great concept. I think it's cool. I still like the compass. I think it's rad. I like the map is actually a good one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there we go.
I like the heart of Davy Jones because, you know, what do you know? Davy Jones, I love everything about him. So that's that one's my favorite.
Big, gooey heart.
Just cutting out your own heart and putting it in a box is really metal.
I think I know the answer to this, but shall we rank these three movies quickly before getting to the pitches?
Sure. My favorite movie, easily number two, Dead Man's Chest. Second favorite is this one, even though there's a lot of problems with it. Yeah. Number one, I don't really have a whole lot of desire to go back to.
I thought we were going to have the same. No. Wow. I definitely had number two as first. I went 2-1-3.
I went 2-3-1.
Interesting. Do you feel the same about the original Star Wars trilogy?
Yeah.
2-3-1?
Yeah. 2-3-1. Like I mentioned at the top of this series,
see, I think
the first movies are good, but they're not ones that I want to go back and watch a lot.
Right.
Whereas a lot of the stuff that I really love about those respective series is done in 2 and 3.
Mm. I don't know. I liked the feeling I had watching the first one where it felt really cool and that score came in and it was just really invigorating.
Oh, right.
I don't want to get into it, but when they're on the sandbar. Having their sandbar standoff, there's this
Western thing. Yeah, a little.
And
on
it
the
was
nose.
Right after Keith Richards, and I was like, I bet he played that. And it was like this like cheesy guitar riff. I'm like, I didn't care for it.
Yeah, but they did have Bill Nye give the high eyebrow into the camera.
Sure did.
So there you go.
All right, guys, thank you for joining us for our very first spinoff series of Storage Room Movie Boom. So we will return now to our regularly scheduled programming, which is. Pitches week to week. Randomness. Exactly. We'll see what goes off. So this week, we are now going to jump to our second and final segment of the show, the pitches. This is where one of us, this week it's me, will blind pitch Sam three movies because we're back to movies. Sam will choose one of those movies and that will be what we watch next week.
Sounds good.
Are you ready?
Of course.
Number one. All praise Lord and Savior JW, for he hath delivered us from a destroyer of our own creation. Let love, survival, and the Holy Spirit flow through this equally holy clothing in the land of inhuman shades of gray.
Okay.
Okay. Number two. Here we find a benign creature stalked by a predatory parasite. A story of biological symbiosis that could be greatly improved by the dulcet tones of David Attenborough. These inherent enemies must engage in an internal battle while also battling a granular external enemy.
Okay.
Okay. Number three. A young woman's future hangs in the balance. Is she to challenge her family for the right to the throne? In doing so, will she be forced to give up consequential incest and convincing facial expressions? Peril and drama escalate in this bloodline spectacle.
Wow, that's an interesting set of pitches.
Sure is.
Give it to me again.
Okay, so number one. All praise Lord and Savior JW, for he hath delivered us from a destroyer of our own creation. Let love, survival, and the Holy Spirit flow through this equally holy clothing in the land of inhuman shades of gray.
Okay.
Okay. So number two. Here we find a benign creature stalked by a predatory parasite. A story of biological symbiosis that could be greatly improved by the dulcet tones of David Attenborough. These inherent enemies must engage in an internal battle while also battling a granular external enemy.
Oh, I know what number two is.
Oh, I'm so excited that you know one. Okay, got it.
At least I'm pretty sure I know one.
Yes, I was really hoping. I'm trying to drop clues. Okay, number three. A young woman's future hangs in the balance. Is she to challenge her family for the right to the throne? In doing so, will she be forced to give up consequential incest and convincing facial expressions? Peril and drama escalate in this bloodline spectacle.
I feel like I should know the other two also, but I'm pretty sure I've got number two on the nose.
Yeah?
The question is, do I want to watch that?
So I will be excited if you get it. It sounds like you probably know what it is.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk through any of these? So the first one
is about the holy robe and
the holy robe, holy clothing, Inhuman Shades of Grey.
Inhuman Shades of Grey.
The second one is the predatory parasite symbiosis.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And number three is about a woman's possible rise to.
I feel like I should know that one, but I am not coming up with anything on it.
Do you want to choose one and then you can guess? Or do you want what order do you want to do that in?
I don't know. What would you think?
I think in previous episodes, I have kind of speculated if it was a guess. Like if I had a guess, I would have said it before I chose.
I think your second option is Spider-Man 3.
Okay. Do you have guesses on the first or third one?
I feel like I should. And I'm mainly getting stuck on the clothing part, like being some sort of
holy clothing.
Holy clothing. And you said what? Some sort of. What was the rest of
it? Can
you
read it again?
Yeah.
The first one was, "All praise Lord and Savior JW, for he hath delivered us from a destroyer of our own creation. Let love, survival, and the Holy Spirit flow through this equally holy clothing in the land of Inhuman Shades of Gray." Man, that's a mouthful that I wrote.
The only thing that's coming into my head, and I know it's not it, it's just whatever stupid brain I've got, is Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
That's really funny.
That's all I can think of. So, gosh, which one of these?
You know, what do you want to pick? So you think you know
it's
what
it's one or two. Okay. Because the third one, I'm not coming up with. Screw it. We'll do B.
You want to do B?
We'll do B. That's the one I think is Spider-Man 3.
You would be correct. So your choice is Spider-Man 3. So what was it that tipped you off? Was it the granular?
The granular thing is part of the, they got it, and then symbiosis, and then it just clicked.
Good. Got it. I was hoping you would get that one.
Yeah. I haven't watched that movie in a long time.
So would you like to hear what your other ones were?
Of course.
So your first one about Lord and Savior JW, destroyer from delivering us from a destroyer of our own creation.
I'm going to slap my forehead when you say this.
The Matrix Revolutions.
Oh, wow. So see, I would not have gotten that.
Our Lord and Savior JW is John Wick, Mr. Keanu Reeves himself.
There you go. Okay.
And he is a overt Christ figure.
That's true.
In a world where all of their clothing has holes in them. So that's what I meant by the holy clothing.
Okay. I was thinking lowercase H, but or a capital H, but you know, we're good. Okay.
So it was Matrix Revolutions.
Now, the question is, though, would we have had to have watched all three Matrix movies? Because those are very connected to, and at least two and three. It's like this series where the first movie was pretty standalone and then two and three were done very dependently upon each other.
I get what you're saying, but no,
it didn't matter. I didn't pick it, but
right. I think based upon the rules that we have set forth on this, first off, it has to be the first of a series.
True.
From there. I mean, to me, even though like we talked about like Lord of the Rings, like before we decided to do the spinoff series thing, because you're like, well, it's really one story. It is, but technically it's three different movies.
Yeah, but who the hell's going to start with number two or three?
There are people that have done that.
Well,
I mean,
people are stupid.
I started with the second John Wick movie and there are about to be four of those.
There's a difference between a direct sequel and a one story that takes three movies.
You're right. But I still, either way, neither of these were the first part.
Right.
Neither of them are act one. So number three, The Godfather Part 3.
Oh, never saw it. So
I haven't either. I was kind of hoping we would watch it.
Oh,
so
well, sorry.
My themes of the week based on this movie, worst thirds.
Worst thirds.
So the third
Matrix.
See,
I'm surprised you didn't put X-Men 3 in this.
I was thinking about it and I was like, what? Because I did Spider-Man 3. I was like,
that's true.
Yeah. So that's you true. Did pick that.
Oh, yes.
And we will be watching. So everybody, if you want to jump back to Sam Raimi's classic Spider-Man 3.
Another 2007 movie also.
It is, actually. I was thinking about that. So we got some Tobey Maguire. We got some Kirsten Dunst. We got some stupid hair.
We got some Topher Grace and Thomas Hayden Church trying to carry the movie.
And I think Franco's in this one, too.
Oh, yeah. Franco's in this one.
Fucking everybody's in this movie, guys.
Yeah.
Well, wowzers. Well, goodness. I'm glad. Okay. I'm glad that you picked one. So that's
we had both figured out which one. Yeah, we figured out one. But this is the first time that we just said, screw it. I'm going with this. And I think it's this.
Exactly. That was really good. Good
Eyes
job.
Eyes wide open.
Oh, man, everybody, I'm exhausted from this episode. I felt like that was just like.
Yes. Apologies for any incoherencies that I had in particular.
Well,
because
both of us, the story was so rambling. I mean, it was here, it was there, there was this, there was that, you know, like it moves really fast. But it's also like there were definitely parts, like I mentioned, I was so fucking bored. I was like, oh, yeah. Christ, where are we at? But hopefully you were not bored by this episode. And you can find us at Storage Room Pod on Twitter, Storage Room Movie Boom on Instagram, or you can send us an OG electronic mail.
E-mail, if you will.
Exactly. At storageroompod@gmail.com. Also, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. At the very least, subscribe and rate. That'd be great.
Yes.
And review if you've got time. It'd be wonderful. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.